Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out of a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. Huh. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. After 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and then the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Wednesday. That means Wild Card Wednesday.
You mean Wild Card Wednesday?
Any artist, any song, anything, that's coming up as well. So if you'd like to get into that and get your requests in, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, coming up on the show this morning, we'll have a Know Your Onion. Get some prizes to give away. And the deal is Tom's going to read you some news headlines, and you have to decide whether they're real or they're from the satirical comedy news newspaper website, The Onion. So real news is getting so weird nowadays that, you know, it can be confused with, you know, comedy satirical news because it's so strange from The Onion. So I'll read you the headline and you say real or onion. It's that simple. You get a majority of five correct. You win some prizes. But nobody goes home empty-handed at all anyway. We'll do that later on after the 4:30 news, in fact. So Know Your Onion is coming up. And in after the 1:30 news, our good friend Kevin Powell is going to join us, K. Powell. You can check him out on Twitter at KPowell720. He does the sports right here on WGN for the Rokan show featuring Ana de Volantes, and you can hear him every weekday afternoon doing that. He also has a really cool podcast that you can get at WGNradio.com called Powell at the Park. And we'll talk about that. Lots of sports stuff to talk about. Always fun to talk with Kev, and we will do that a little bit later on. It's hard to believe that the movie Speed with Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock and Dennis Hopper is 25 years old. It celebrated the 25th anniversary on the 10th on Monday. Monday the 10th marked the 25th anniversary of the release of Speed. And we've got some great facts about Speed, and we'll talk about the movie and the impact that it made and how great it was and how terrible the sequel was. So that's coming up. And also, 1999 was a pretty huge year for music. We're going to go back to 1999. Rolling Stones' Rob Sheffield put together the 99 best songs of 1999. So we're going to go back in time to 1999 and again, that was 20 years ago, and we'll go back 20 years and take a look at what Rob Sheffield thinks of the best songs of 1999. We'll listen to some of them and talk about the music explosion that did happen in that year. So that's coming up, and anytime you want to get in here, it's 312-981-7200 for talk or text, 312-981-7200, and also for your Wild Card Wednesday request.
You hear me, Wild Card Wednesday?
Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Stay connected on our Facebook page, too. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. Great way to stay connected. It's interactive and it's updated during the show, so make sure you check that out. And like us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. So that's what's coming up on the show this Wednesday morning. Let me say hello to the guys I work with, my great producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm great. I'm buzzing, man.
Yeah.
That Ghostbusters screening was a delight.
Yeah, last night I hosted a screening of Ghostbusters, 35th anniversary screening at the AMC Rosemont 18, and we had a huge turnout. And we had a blast beforehand at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. I posted some pictures on my regular Facebook page. The Windy City branch of the Ghostbusters were there in full costume, full regalia, had their proton packs and their outfits and all that cool stuff. Even the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man showed up. He was big and giant and standing right outside the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, and the Ecto-1 car was parked in front of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, and we had a blast. It was a lot of fun, and as always, the service and the management and the food and everything at Caddyshack is just terrific, and so it's always a blast to do that, and they had a great time. They hosted the 35-year anniversary celebration of Ghostbusters at the restaurant, and it was they did a great job with it. And we had a great time beforehand, great meal, and then went over to the AMC Rosemont 18 and we watched Ghostbusters on the big screen with a nice big crowd. And we had a really fun talk afterwards and everything. So, Tom, that was your first time seeing it on the big screen, right?
Yeah, no, I was used to watching it on tape, on VHS tape from right. Hollywood Video.
That's what a lot of people said to me afterwards. They were like, yeah, man, nothing but VHS for years.
Yeah.
That's the way I watched it, was on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
Makes kind of a difference when you have a 4K restored version of it.
I've already decided. I think tomorrow I'm just going to run to Best Buy and get the 4K restoration because it is impeccable.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is impeccable. Yeah, so
it really, they did a beautiful job with it.
And I was excited how many kids were there.
Lots of kids. Yeah.
First time maybe even seeing it.
Yeah, there were a few kids in there that had never seen it before. It's understandable. The movie's 35 years old, so there's obviously a group of people in there who had never seen it. But for the most part, everybody in that room had seen Ghostbusters, not just once, but many times. We had a couple of Ghostbusters in costume at the theater, a few. We had a guy with a Slimer mask on. That would actually, Ike from the Country Club Hills was there. He had his Ghostbusters uniform on, and he had a Slimer on his head, a Slimer ghost on his head. And it was fun to meet him. It was a really good night all the way around. We had a great time. And my folks, you know, came out and they were having fun at the restaurant with all the Ghostbusters and stuff. So, and you got to meet my folks.
Yeah, that was honestly a thrill.
Ah.
I was very happy to see your dad in person.
Yeah,
I get
to talk to him every Monday morning.
Yeah, and nice to put a face to the voice. And yeah. Your mother was lovely, and
my dad did the whole routine.
Oh my God!
Pulled out the wallet, did all the visual gags that he does to every single person that he ever meets. Yeah, and they had a great time, and mm-hmm. it was a great time all around, a great night all the way around. And so I do want to mention that we are not going to be at the Rosemont 18 in July or August because they're doing remodeling the whole second floor. If you've been to the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly the Movieco Theater, the second floor is where they have the bar and the dining area, and the big crazy theaters on the second floor. They're big and beautiful with the curved screen and the deluxe seating and stuff. Well, they're actually doing doing remodeling on the second floor, and we want to continue to host our screenings on the second floor because the theaters are unbelievably cool. And that was your first time in one of the second floor theaters, a premier theater.
I was blown away at how nice it was. That screen is massive.
Yeah.
And even sitting, I was pretty close to the screen, but I was so happy that I had the seat that I did.
There's not a bad seat in the house.
No, really.
But what they're doing is they're updating it, and they're going to, because, you know, when you go to movie theaters now, 95% of the movie theaters out there have the big leather reclining seats, or at least one or two theaters do. And so they're installing those. They're going to put in a new interior. I think they're going to update the sound even more and update some of the equipment. But they're doing some massive remodeling, so we're not going to be able to use the theaters in July and August. We'll be back in September when the remodeling is done, and there's a brand new theater with beautiful deluxe reclining seats and all that cool upgraded stuff. But what we're planning on doing in July to keep the film club going, we talked to the Caddyshack guys, the restaurant, and we are tentatively, and this because we're still figuring out the details and the pricing and all that stuff and the date, but we are tentatively going to host a screening outside in the courtyard of the Crowne Plaza Hotel, which is where the Flashback Weekend is, and they show movies in that courtyard right next door to the hotel slash right next door to the Murray Brothers Caddyshack. You can sit at Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant. You can look outside and see the courtyard where they're going to have the screening. But we're going to do an outdoor screening just because we want to still keep the film club going while they're, you know, while they're fixing up the theater and remodeling it and adding all the good stuff. So we're going to do an outdoor screening tentatively on July 17th, and I'll keep you updated, of Caddyshack, of the namesake of the restaurant. We've never screened Caddyshack before. It's one of the classic comedies of all time, one of the most quoted movies in my world ever, and part of the Holy Trinity of comedy, Animal House, Stripes, and Caddyshack. We've shown Animal House and we've shown Stripes at my film club. This will be the first time we've done it, and this will be the first time we do an outdoor screening. So we're going to do like a nice outdoor screening. Hopefully we'll have a nice summer night, and everybody can hang outside and out in the courtyard and watch Caddyshack. And so that's the next Nick DiGiglio Film Club screening. All the details are being ironed out because we just talked about it with the guys last night at Caddyshack. And it's in conjunction with the Caddyshack restaurant, obviously. And so we'll have some dinner beforehand at the Caddyshack restaurant and then step right outside, you know, like 6 feet from where you're eating. Walk right outside, sit down, get a nice seat, and watch Caddyshack on the big screen under the stars. So that's the next planned thing. We'll give you all the details as they come along, as everything is ironed out. But tentatively right now, it is Wednesday. It's on a Wednesday. It's not going to be on a Tuesday. It's going to be on a Wednesday because they have special stuff happening on Tuesdays, on the Tuesday at the restaurant and the hotel. So we're going to do it on a Wednesday. So this will be the one and only time we ever have the screenings on Wednesday. And then we'll go back to Tuesdays after that. But it'll be Wednesday, July 17th, we'll do it at dusk, whenever that is. So it might be a later start than 8 o'clock, considering that July it stays light out. So we might have a later start than 8 o'clock, just because we got to wait till it gets dark.
Right.
So that's the plan, and it was a great idea. You know, Mike Kurz, who helps us out and helps produce this, and also Mike and Mia, who run the Flashback Horror Convention. Worked it out with the Caddyshack guys, and the management was all over it. They were like, yes, we love being in collaboration with you guys. And a lot of film club members went to the Caddyshack restaurant last night.
Oh, yeah.
So there were a lot of people there.
Even
so.
When I walked in at about 6:30.
Yeah.
And I just came in, and one of the managers or the host was up front with someone on the phone. And he's like, "Yeah, it's pretty packed right now. We've got WGN here, you know, so I don't know if we can get you a seat." I was like, "Oh wow!"
Yeah, no, they came out, and everybody loved the movie, and everybody had a great time. But again, July 17th, tentatively, we'll figure out the pricing and all that stuff. An outdoor screening of Caddyshack. So that's the next event. We might not have an event at all in August. But we'll be back in September in a brand new deluxe movie theater. So there you go. That's what happened last night. We had a great time, and that was fun. So thanks to anybody that came out. Did Vic leave? I was going to say hi to Vic. He's not there. Maybe he had to go to the.
We'll say his name.
he had to go to the men's room.
Yeah.
Well. Anyway, I'll say hi to Vic whenever he comes back. So Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom. He will be handling all the news for us this morning, or at least I hope so. he'll be handling all the news in the newsroom, as he does every weekday morning. So Vic Vaughn is in the newsroom all the way until 5 o'clock and beyond. So that's what's happening. Tom's here. Vic is going to be here at some point, and then we'll get the show going. After the 1:30 news, Kevin Powell from WGN Sports is going to join us, and we are going to talk indeed about sports. Last week, we were talking about this article that from the realrundown.com that talks about short-lived and easily forgotten 1980s TV series. And we had such a great time with this article and this list, talking about these ridiculous shows. We didn't even get through the whole thing because we were having so much fun talking about them. Well, I'm gonna get some of these out there again and start talking about these easily forgotten 1980s TV series. And that's what we're going to do when we come back. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And for your Wildcard Wednesday request.
Yeah!
So all that's coming up right here on 720 WGN, so stay tuned. everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are here until 5 a.m. It's Wednesday, Wildcard Wednesday.
You mean Wildcard Wednesday?
Get your requests in now at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. So we were talking about this this fun article where they were talking about short-lived and easily forgotten 1980s TV series, some of which we remembered, many of which we didn't, almost all of which were weird. So here's the next one that they talked about. Speaking of Ghostbusters, Ernie Hudson and Adam West were in a show called The Last Precinct. I vaguely remember it. The series lasted from April 11th, 1986 to May 30th, 1986 and was viewed by some as merely a way for TV to cash in on the popularity of the Police Academy movies of the big screen. The 56th precinct, known as the Last Precinct, was a dumping ground of sorts for various LAPD police officers who really didn't seem cut out for a career in law enforcement. The officers on the series were Price Pascal, played by Jonathan Perpich, a handsome police officer who was the only officer that had any kind of real detective skills. There was also Officer William Rader, played by Rick Dukeman. Oh, the great Rick Dukeman. The late, great Rick Dukeman. How much of a genius is he in The Burbs?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And he's fantastic in Groundhog Day. Yeah, just put that anywhere, pal.
And also the Lethal Weapon parody, Loaded Weapon.
Oh, yeah, Loaded Weapon. But he was a funny guy and a great stand-up.
Very much so.
But, I mean, I really, like, the quintessential performance that he gave in movies was in The Burbs. He's unbelievable in that movie.
The first time I saw him was in Scary Movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he plays Anna Faris's dad.
Yeah, that's right. Rick Dukeman played Officer William Rader, an overweight and bumbling motorcycle cop. Mel Brubaker, played by Randy Brooks, who used to be a man. King, played by Pete Wilcox, an Elvis impersonator. Over-the-hill cops, Butch. Keenan Wynn was in this show? One of the most legendary, you know Keenan Wynn?
I believe I do.
You've seen Dr. Strangelove?
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
He's the soldier that you're going to have to answer to the Coca-Cola company. I think you're a prevert. That's that's Keenan Wynn, and has been in 9,000 movies, Keenan Wynn.
Yeah, and I remember him from a Twilight Zone episode called A World of His Own.
Yeah.
He's
one of the most recognizable character actors that ever worked, and he worked a lot. You know, worked a lot in the 50s, but especially in the 60s and 70s. Oh, man. Well, I didn't even know Keenan Wynn was in The Last Precinct. And it aired opposite Dallas. West said that it was really a modernization of the Keystone Cops with a lot of slapstick comedy and some upside-down Hill Street blues. And it was Adam West's first series in 20 years. All right, now, I don't know how anybody doesn't remember this one. Simon McCorkindale in Manimal. How do you not remember Manimal? The show lasted 8 episodes. I can't believe it only lasted 8 episodes because everybody, you know, who was around at that time, nobody will forget Manimal. It aired from September 30th, 1983 to December 31st, 1983. Handsome Simon McCorkindale was Jonathan Chase, a professor at New York University who taught animal behavioral sciences. This fit well with the superpower that Chase had, the ability to transform into any animal at will. Chase used his special ability to fight crime, and only a few people knew about his talent. Ty Earl, played by Michael D. Roberts, a friend of with whom Chase served in Vietnam, and pretty police detective Brooke McKenzie, played by Melanie Anderson, who often teamed up with Chase to solve crimes. Notable guest stars include Richard Lynch, Ursula Andress, and Keenan Wynn again.
He's all over the place.
Sadly, Simon would pass away October 14, 2010, at the age of 58 from colorectal cancer. And the DVD was released. The show was released on DVD in 2015.
So he changes into
any animal.
Any animal he chooses, and he uses this to help solve crimes.
Exactly. It's Manimal. I remember, this is like a legendary, ridiculous show. So, Richard Lynch, by the way, if you don't know that guy's name, Google image Richard Lynch. One of the best villainy, psycho-looking character actors of all time. Did tons of TV, did a bunch of movies, always played a psycho or always played a weirdo because he just looks like a psycho slash weirdo.
I do remember him from the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
I watched
he was in a ton of stuff. So, all right, well, there you go. Manimal, everybody. Whoever thought that we would be speaking about Manimal again like 36 years after the thing was on the TV? But, yeah, I watched it. It was ridiculous. Okay, we're going to break here, and then the news is coming up, and then after the news, we'll be joined by Kevin Powell, and we're going to talk sports right after this.
And I know it's going to be a lovely day.
Everybody, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here until 5 a.m. It's Wild Card Wednesday.
Yeah, man, Wild Card Wednesday.
Get your requests in. Any artist, any song, anything. And there you go. Hey, we're going to be talking a little bit later on. If you can believe it, it's the 25th anniversary of Speed. So we're going to tell you a whole bunch of facts about Speed, the movie Speed. We're going to talk about recipes that no one makes anymore. And then we're going to dive into 99 best songs of 1999. So we're going to go back in time and talk a little bit about some of those songs from 1999. And that's coming up right here on the show. Right now, though, you heard Bill Withers, and you know what that means. It means Kevin Powell, our good buddy, does WGN Sports on the Rokan Show with Ann DeBlantis on weekday afternoons. You can hear him. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720. And you can check out his Powell at the Park podcasts as well. He covers the sports, and we talk about the sports with him usually once a month or so. And let's bring Kevin back onto the show. Hey, Kevin, how you doing, man?
Nick, Speed was one of my first favorite action movies as a kid. I absolutely love that movie.
I do too. It's one of my favorites, and it's 25 years old, which just makes me feel really old.
I need to watch that soon. It's been a long time. But, yeah. Again, thank you for having me, my man. It's been too long.
I appreciate it. First of all, tell everybody about Powell at the Park and the latest episodes that you can check out.
Yeah, I'm really happy with the latest one. Lucas Giolito, who is, of course, the White Sox starter, was named the American League Pitcher of the Month for May. He's just been absolutely outstanding. He missed a couple starts with a hamstring, and ever since then, he's just been dominant. He looks like an all-star, and the White Sox all of a sudden look like they've got a handful of players that look like they should be playing in the Midsummer Classic. So I talked with Lucas Giolito on the podcast. I also recapped the Craig Kimbrell signing for the Cubs, and Epstein just continues to find a way to add pieces to this golden era that is the Cubs right now. So it's a good podcast. You can check it out on iTunes, Google Play, WGNRadio.com, all that good stuff.
Yeah, this signing, by the way, of Craig Kimbrell, it is really something that was it's a hole that needs to be filled. No question about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's exactly what they needed, which was a power arm at the back end of the bullpen. They needed a closer, with all due respect to the Pedro Strops and the C-Shacks. It's what they needed. You know, a few years ago, 2016, they go and get Aroldis Chapman, then they had Wade Davis, and this was the guy. It's exactly what they needed. And basically every Cubs fan I've talked to this whole season, even the offseason leading up to it, was go get Craig Kimbrell. And they went and did it. And the reason it took so long for Kimbrell to sign was because he got a qualifying offer from the Red Sox, which is, it can get a little complicated. But the gist of it is, if you sign him before this year's draft, which is passed now, you would have to give up a future draft pick of your own. When the draft pick clears, or when the draft clears, which it did a week or so ago, you can sign him without having to forfeit a draft pick. So that's where the weight was for all the teams. Same with Dallas Keuchel, the pitcher who was with the Astros last year. So that's why it took so long. Look, Theo went out. He added a piece that they absolutely needed.
Yeah, they're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. I was glad to see it. I really was. Now, when are we looking at him coming in?
Well, it's been roughly a week or so. He's thrown a couple of bullpens. He's out at the Cubs spring training complex in Mesa, so he'll be there for Week, week and a half, and then the idea is probably to send him to Iowa or a minor league stint to face some live batting for a week or two. So I would say we're probably 2 weeks out or so before he joins the Cubs if everything goes to plan.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking beginning of July. That was the time frame.
Yeah,
I
it could even be a little bit before that. But, yeah, that's probably a good marker right there, right around then.
Well, speaking of the Cubs, man, they're having a rough go of it on the road, man. They've lost 9 of their 12 last 12 road games, that would be 10, because they lost last night and they got killed last night, blowing a 4-0 lead against the Rockies the other night. What are we talking about on this road trip here?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if there's anything necessarily one thing to pinpoint. I guess it's just the classic. You know, home is home and away is away. And the Cubs have one of the better home records at Wrigley, but they've struggled on the road. To be honest, I don't really know if there's one thing you can pinpoint with it other than the fact that you're away from home. And the Cubs have been so good at Wrigley over the past 3, 4, 5 years. They've been such a tough team to beat for obvious reasons. I mean, it's Wrigley, it's home, it's a packed house every night. And look, Coors Field is weird. It is. You know, I thought it was kind of a funny line from, you know, Chris Bryant rolled his ankle a few days ago, and there was talk maybe he'd miss the opener against the Rockies, and then he was in the lineup, and Joe Maddon was like, well, it's really tough to talk a hitter out of a lineup when you're going to Coors Field, because everybody knows you got a pretty good shot at hitting homers there, which is obviously the case. To be honest, I don't really have an answer with the road struggles. I think it's just a matter of being away from Wrigley, and it just sort of happens that way. And they've run in some really good teams on the road as well.
Yeah, well, and also, and not only that, but I mean, after this series against the Rockies, which concludes today, they go to L.A. And I mean, and we're talking about the Dodgers now, and that's not going to be an easy go of it at all either.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, if you've been watching the Cubs, you've gotten to know the Dodgers pretty well over the past few years. They've met in the postseason a couple times, and the Dodgers are just—it's just amazing what they've been able to do. I know they've lost consecutive World Series, but it looks like they're definitely a team the Cubs could potentially meet in the postseason again, and it's not going to get any easier. Dodgers have the best home record in all of baseball, which I believe is just a tick above the Cubs. I think those are the top two home records in the National League, so not going to get it any easier for the Cubs during this road trip here.
Yeah, man, it's well, we'll keep an eye on it and root for them. In the Chicago Tribune, they had an interview with John Lester, who spent 8.5 seasons in Boston with David Ortiz, and this story is crazy. The David Ortiz story—it's absolutely nuts. He was in the Dominican Republic, and he was shot in the back at a nightclub. Is that the correct?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was Sunday. All of a sudden, we're getting these alerts, and we're checking our phones. And it—if you see the footage, it's just. Look, it's bizarre. I mean, it's the Dominican Republic, and he was in a very popular area with bars and clubs and all that sort of thing. And a motorcycle dropped off a shooter, whatever you want to describe him as. He came up and shot him right behind David Ortiz, right in the lower back, and he had to go, obviously, emergency surgery after that. And then he was the Red Sox, who have been obviously super supportive of him. Guy won 3 World Series there, 10 All-Star appearances, so many huge hits for that organization. The Red Sox send their plane, the team plane, to the Dominican. They pick him up, bring him back to Boston. They put him in an ambulance, rush him to a hospital. He undergoes a second. They described it as an exploratory surgery, kind of, you know, you're back in your home area, you know, your home base of Boston. He has a home in Boston, obviously a home in Dominican. So they go in there and check things out. The good news is he did do a little bit of walking, but there was some serious damage done, and it's still a lot of question marks regarding, you know, why did this happen? Why would one of the most beloved Dominicans of, you know, ever, why did this happen? And you saw the guy who was driving the motorcycle was beaten badly by a group of people that were at the club. And I think, I mean, obviously, it's one way of going about it, but I think it sort of goes to show, you know, that he has, you know, the reports you read, he does such a massive support in the Dominican because of, you know, he gives a lot back to the area in terms of baseball and just the, you know, socially and in general. So, It's sad. It's a weird story. I think there's a lot of question marks that still need to be answered, but obviously everybody's, you know, you never really heard a bad thing about David Ortiz. Whether you like the Red Sox or not, you just really didn't.
No, absolutely. And it's just such a, I mean, it's just so, like you said, what he has done for Dominican Republic and the support and everything. It's just crazy. But John Lester played with him, and he talked a little bit about the time he spent with him.
Yeah, he did, and like I said, you really never heard anything bad about David Ortiz. Pedro Martinez, who, of course, longtime Red Sox, was tearing up talking about it. There's some White Sox players who are from the Dominican, and they were completely stunned by it. They couldn't believe it. Such a beloved guy from that area is going through this. So it's, like I said, a lot of question marks here. I'm sure there's going to be a lot more to this story.
Yeah, well, we obviously wish him the best. When I first heard the story, I was like, it's still hard to believe. But when I first heard it, I was like, that's got to be a joke.
When I'm doing reports, it's just weird to say David Ortiz was shot Sunday night. Like, what? It's nuts. And yeah, like you said, just hoping for the best with him.
Yeah.
Cause he was one of my favorite players to watch. He was just this big guy who was mostly a DH, and he was such a clutch hitter for the Red Sox. And he helped turn the Red Sox, which were, you know, the lovable loser version of the American League, essentially. It was, you know, and he kind of helped turn that franchise around. So, I'm really interested to see where this story goes, because it's just, you kind of scratch your head, like, how could this possibly happen?
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll keep our eye on that, and if you want to read what John Lester said, remembering the time that he worked with, or that he was a teammate with David Ortiz, the Tribune wrote about it. Okay, Kevin, hang on, okay, man?
You got it.
Okay, buddy. Kevin Powell is with us. We're talking sports. We'll come back. We'll talk a little White Sox here on WGN and other sports things that we'll jump into. You can listen to Kevin Powell Report on the sports on here on WGN on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes on weekday afternoons right here on 720 WGN. More with Kevin after this.
My friend is feels their appointed duty.
Welcome back, everybody. We are back, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here on 720 WGN, here till 5 a.m. Wildcard Wednesday.
Give me Wildcard Wednesday.
Get your requests in now, and we'll play them later, and that's any artist, any song, anything. So get your requests in right now. You're hearing Bill Withers. That means it's Kevin Powell. Kevin Powell. WGN Sports on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantes weekday afternoons. You can follow him on Twitter at kpowell720. And make sure you listen to his Powell at the Park podcast, which are available at WGNradio.com. And we welcome Kevin back. Kevin, welcome back.
Nick, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. All right, well, let's talk a little Sox here.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about... You talked a little bit about it because you mentioned it in your podcast, but Lucas Giolito, let's talk a little bit about that. He's living up to his top prospect billing, that's for sure.
Yeah, and we've talked to him recently, and he says this season's sort of a relief because he finished with the worst ERA among qualifying pitchers in the American League last year. And so basically he went from the top regarded prospect in all of baseball when he was coming out of high school to going to statistically the worst pitcher in baseball, at least if you look at the ERA last year. So for him to do what he's doing now, these are his words. He says it's relief. It is. I mean, obviously some doubt's going to creep in if you're having those sorts of struggles. And he's completely turned around. It's a combination of a lot of things. It's mental confidence, some mechanic adjustments. His velocity is higher than it was last year, which has made all his stuff more effective. But he is absolutely... it's been an absolute gem this year, and he's been a ton of fun to watch. And he looks like an ace for the White Sox. So it's basically everything they hoped he would be, and it's finally all coming together for Giolito.
Yeah, yeah, and you pitcher of the month, which is a nice thing right there, and deserved by all accounts.
Yeah, it had been a few years since the last pitcher to get that was Chris Sale. I believe it was 2016 or 15. So, look, this season has been night and day for the White Sox because a lot of the guys that are part of the core here for the Sox, the Giolitos, the Tim Andersons, the Yoan Moncadas, even Eloy Jimenez who had a huge homer last night at the Sox game in their win over the Nationals. There are a lot of players on the team, but those are the guys that really, really matter. Those are the guys that were either drafted or brought in from from trade. You know, when this rebuild started, it started with trade. It started with the Chris Sale trade. It started with Adam Eaton to the Nationals, which was, you know, Giolito was a part of that trade. So it's interesting to see the Nats, you know, twice over the past week now. Giolito was a guy that was a centerpiece of that deal. Adam Eaton to the Nationals, you got back Giolito, Renato Lopez, Dane Dunning, and all those guys look like they can really contribute to this organization. So I think the guys that you really are kind of leaning on to make this thing work are all having pretty good years.
Yeah. Are they actually giving more than people thought they would? Are they doing better than most people thought that the Sox would do this year?
You know, I thought they'd be about a 10-game improvement or so, roughly, and they won 62 games last year, so I kind of pegged them about 72, 75 wins, and I think they're at a 9-game improvement. Like, if you went back at this time last year, they were 9 games worse, or nine wins better now this time last year. So I would say they're definitely playing obviously better than last year, and I think a lot of us expected them to see some strides made. You know, I think it is important to remember, and I said this a million times last year, that individual growth is probably something you want to focus on a little bit more than team wins, which is sort of weird to say. Obviously, winning is everything, but a rebuild is a rebuild, and the Sox haven't exactly described it that way, but it is a rebuild. When you trade some of those guys they have, this is a rebuild. It's the individuals. It's the, like I said, the Giolitos, the Mercados. Those guys playing well, I think, is what has Sox fans most excited, because those are sustainable guys that are very young, high ceilings. They can really move your franchise in the right direction.
Yeah. Here's another scary foul ball situation in Monday's game at Guaranteed Rate Field. Now, we had a couple of weeks ago, Albert Almora lined a foul ball into the stands at Minute Maid Park, which is one of the scariest things I've ever seen, and and his reaction was so crazy and sad, and I'm glad, you know, we're all glad that the girl is that the little girl is fine, but that's scary stuff, man. It's really scary. So now, what happened at Guaranteed Rate?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think as much was made out of it, because, you know, Albert Almora's reaction was so, you're like, wow, you feel awful for him. I mean, he was in tears, and Eloy Jimenez hit the ball, and he kind of winced a little bit, because I think he realized that he hit it so hard, and he was going right into the stands, and he kind of, I don't know if winced is the right word, but he flinched a little bit, like, oh, man, no, not again.
Yeah.
And we hadn't really heard much of it, and then all of a sudden, you know, some people had heard about somebody had been hit again, and, you know, there's always not a lot of details in this. A lot of fans want to, you know, stay kind of under the radar when it comes to this sort of thing, but basically the gist of it is, yeah, hard hit foul ball, bounced and hit a woman, and that's basically the most I know about it. She's doing okay. Like, the bottom line is, it's the netting conversation.
Yeah,
that's the big thing.
That's the big conversation that's coming up is the netting. What's that conversation like in the sports world right now? Where are people standing on this?
Well, I think just about everybody, except for, you know, there's a handful of people always, of course, are going to say the opposite. But, I mean, come on. I mean, at this point, it's just like, what are we doing here? And what's the difference now compared to 5 years ago, 10 years ago? But balls are being hit harder than ever.
Yeah.
And anybody who wants to point, oh, you stop looking at your phone or keep, you know, stay focused in the game. It's like, come on. You could turn to your left for a second to order a hot dog, look back to your right, in a matter of 2 or 3 seconds and a ball's coming at you.
Absolutely.
The balls are coming off the bat at 110 miles per hour, Nick. I mean, they've never been hit harder. They've never been thrown harder. So it just sort of seems common sense. The obstruction of view is sort of a ridiculous argument, considering some of the most sought-after seats are right behind home plate.
Yep.
Where there is netting.
I totally agree with you, man. I totally agree. And the whole visual obstruction thing is absurd. I mean, you know, they used to really not have netting at in the NHL.
Right.
You know, and people were getting slammed with pucks, so they finally did it, and nobody's complaining now. So,
right.
You know. And speaking of the NHL, let's do a quick Game 7, man. What a series.
Yeah.
What a series. Stanley Cup Final is tonight, and and it's in Boston, and they've made a series out of it right here, and it's a dramatic one too. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the St. Louis Blues never won a cup. And so what are you thinking about for this for Game 7 tonight?
You know, it has been a fun series. It's been a hard-hitting series, yeah, man. Yeah, There's been some serious contact going on. I'm actually curious what you think, Nick, because I've been saying when this started, I go, this is a sort of a lose-lose because Boston has won a million championships over the past 8, 9, 10 years.
Yeah.
Against the Blues, the hated Blues. If you're a Blackhawks fan,
yeah.
So where are you leaning, Nick? You're the hockey guy. I should be asking you.
Well, I can't root for the St. Louis Blues. I can't do it.
And
it's a great story. And you know, look, I'm a Cubs fan, and we waited how many 108 years before the World Series came back to Chicago, and that's my that's double my life basically. And so I can see the fans in St. Louis really wanting it, and that would be a great story to have a cup finally come to St. Louis. But I can't root for the St. Louis Blues. I can't do it. And I'm not a big Bruins guy either. You're right. I mean, they've won. They're like entitled. They're an entitled NHL hockey team, and I'm not a big. Yeah. I can't really root for them either. I think the hockey's been fun to watch though. And I haven't caught every game or every minute of every game, but I've watched a good portion of it. And anytime you go to a game seven, it's great. Anytime.
Yeah, I guess I'll just say this. I just hope we get a good game.
Yeah.
Because playoff hockey is just edge of your seat stuff. As we know here in Chicago, Hawks have been played in so many huge games, obviously over the past, decade as well. I just want a good game, to be honest with you. I don't know if I'm one of those people who just don't want to see the Blues win because Boston fans get on my nerves a little bit as well. I guess I just want a really good one.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I guess I can't. I agree with that statement entirely. Neither of these horses are horses that I would want to bet on. But
right.
There you go.
Right.
Real quick, before we get you out of here, the Hawks made a hire.
Yep.
Hawks hired Stanley Cup winning coach Mark Crawford as assistant. That's pretty great.
They did, and I guess Jeremy Colleton actually pushed for this. It's Jeremy Colleton, who obviously is new as a head coach, not even a full season into it. I guess he sort of pushed for this. He wanted a head coach type guy on the staff, and Crawford actually has a son. Mark Crawford actually has a son in the system who they believe it's a digital a video assistant coach. There's so much digital work that goes into coaching now as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I thought it was interesting, and I've really believed the Hawks are going to make the playoffs next year. They played really well down the stretch over the past two, the final 2 months, and I just feel like they're going to. I don't think it's wishful thinking. I just do. I think they have enough talent and enough gel under Colleton.
I'm with you too. I'm really looking forward to the season. So, I'm really looking forward to the season. And kicking it off in Prague, that's going to be fun. That's going to be a blast.
Are we going, Nick? Have you convinced management to send all of us, the whole staff, are we working on that stuff?
I'll call Cochran, see what happens.
Okay. All right.
Kev, always a pleasure, man. Everybody, listen to Kevin Powell doing WGN Sports on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellantis on weekday afternoons. Follow him on Twitter at KPowell720 and check out Powell at the Park podcast. Kev, always a pleasure, man. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
You're the best. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it.
Take care. Kevin Powell, everybody, talking sports. All right, we'll take a break. We got the news coming up next right here on 720 WGN. Heard that a few times last night, didn't we, Tom?
Yeah.
Oh, man. There you go. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories of a beautiful downtown Chicago. 1999 was quite an interesting year in music. And Rolling Stones' very own Rob Sheffield put together his article about the 99 best songs of 1999. So we're going to travel back in time about 20 years and talk about the music year that was 1999 and play a little bit of those songs and talk a little bit about the artists and the songs and what was going on in that year. That's coming up on the show. It's also Wild Card Wednesday. You made Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in, any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Who requested the Ghostbusters theme?
The one, the only, Ike.
Ah, Ike was there.
Yes, he was.
In full costume last night. And so, yeah, it was fun. We had a great time at the 35th anniversary screening of Ghostbusters. And the Windy City Ghostbusters did a great job entertaining people at the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant beforehand. That was a lot of fun. Got a few pictures. I got pictures with some of the Ghostbusters. I got a picture with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, who was in all his glory in the parking lot right outside the Murray Brothers restaurant, Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant, too. So it was fun. Speaking of anniversaries of movies, this year is the 35th anniversary, as we mentioned, of Ghostbusters. We celebrated that last night with a really fun night. I mean, that was just a really a lot of fun. And like you said earlier, Tom, it was so nice to see so many families, you know, and kids and stuff. I had to clean up my usual talk afterwards. Because there's mostly adults in the room, you know, when, at my screenings. I can sometimes talk a little bit uncensored more than I do here on the
station.
Work
a little blue?
Just a little bit, yeah. But I had to clean that up because there were so many kids. There were a lot of kids. It was fun to see that. And but, yeah, so 35 years ago, Ghostbusters came out. 25 years ago, Speed came out. And it was in June 10th, 1994. That's when Speed was released, June 10th, 1994. So a couple of days ago, it celebrated its official 25th anniversary. I love that movie. I love Speed. I think it's great. And again, you know that I've always been a really big fan of Keanu Reeves. And you know what's really funny is that I love the fact that the tide has turned on the anti Keanu Reeves.
He's having a moment right now.
Yeah, for a few years. And I've been singing this guy's praises for forever. And, you know, like, people, what are you, crazy? He's an idiot. He's a bad actor. He's the same in every single movie. No, he's not. He's smart. And I think he's great. And he's made a few bad movies. He's not given great performances in some movies. He's not particularly good in Much Ado About Nothing. The period stuff's not good.
I do have an affinity for his performance in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
See, I think he's terrible in
it's,
it.
But that's why it's so funny.
Yeah. That, I don't like that movie.
No, I don't like it
I
at
really
all.
Don't. And I was so looking forward to it when it came out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just remember, I thought some of the sort of onset and camera tricks that Coppola did were cool.
Mm-hmm.
In theory. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I admired some of the stuff that he did, because there were very little, like, sort of visual special effects in that movie. A lot of that stuff was done on camera,
mm-hmm.
and it was kind of similar to what he did with One from the Heart, which is a movie that I love, and I know a lot of people can't stand that movie, mm-hmm. but I love that movie. I think it's a really great personal movie from Coppola.
Sure.
But man, I was disappointed with Dracula. I don't think Gary Oldman's good in it. I just don't. I think Winona Ryder's really miscast, and I'm a big fan of Winona Ryder, but I think she's really miscast. Anthony Hopkins is ridiculous in it. Like, it's a ridiculous performance.
And then you've got Keanu Reeves doing one of the worst British accents. I know where the bastard sleeps.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, I don't know. Listen, you know, the Dracula story has been told so many times and in so many different ways. Although that one was a little more faithful to the Stoker novel than some of the other ones, many of the other ones, but it still didn't work. It just didn't work at all. But so, yeah, he's not been great in every movie, and he's made some decisions where you go, man, that's not a very good movie. But I've been a Keanu fan forever, and I love this resurgence in popularity, and people are suddenly realizing, oh, wait a minute, Keanu's good, and he's smart. Yeah. Welcome on board the train. Where you been?
Well, it's the John Wick movies. It's people have kind of seen him as more of a personality.
Well, you know what movie he's phenomenal in? Well, I mean, there's a lot of Keanu movies that I really like. I love him in Thumbsucker. He's great in that movie. He's also really funny. I can't even remember the name of the movie. It's not a particularly good movie. It's a Nancy Meyer thing, and it's Jack Nicholson and Diane Keaton. He has a heart attack. Keanu Reeves is a doctor. Something's got to give. Something's got to give. Keanu's fantastic in that movie. Now, I still haven't watched it. Oh, man, I should have watched it over the weekend. I still haven't watched the Always Be My Baby.
Oh, he goes for it.
I can't
it's
wait.
It's so funny.
He's got a cameo in this new Netflix romantic comedy, and I'm really curious just to see what he does in the movie. But I hear nothing but, you know, fantastic things about it. But this was a departure. When Speed came out, it was a massive departure for Keanu. It was his first big sort of like action role.
Outside of Point Break.
Outside of Point Break, yeah. Which is, of course, one of the greatest movies ever made. But like he had an entirely different look for the movie. Like he had a buzz cut and everything, and he was pretty built up. Like he did a lot of working out. He was always in shape. He was in shape in Point Break as well. But there was just something about his appearance that seemed different than even in Point Break.
Yeah, it's the most action hero he's looking, ever really looked.
Exactly, because he doesn't look like, I mean, he doesn't, he, there's a, you know, an astonishing amount of fantastic action in Point Break, and I'm just stating the obvious there, because it's one of the best action movies ever made. He's not, you know, your typical, I mean, his name is Johnny Utah, and, you know, and he was college football, you know? Sir, I take the skin off chicken, which is also one of my favorite lines. It's one of my favorite lines. So, it was a departure, and it was the first time that people really noticed Sandra Bullock. That was the movie where people went, "Oh, who's that?" I mean, people noticed her in Demolition Man. I remember liking her in Demolition Man, the ridiculous Sylvester Stallone Wesley Snipes movie. I took a girl on a first date to that movie. So it was kind of a departure, and it was Jan de Bont, who had been a really critically acclaimed cinematographer at that point, shot a lot of Verhoeven movies, and shot a lot of big action special effects movies. He was making his directorial debut with this. He would go on to do the great Twister, and the terrible sequel to Speed 2. And what else did he direct?
Jan de Bont.
Jan de Bont, because it's Jan de Bont. I know he directed Twister, because I love Twister. I love that movie, and I don't care. I don't care what anybody says. That's a terrific movie. But this was his directorial debut, and he knocked it out of the park. Like, he really did a great job.
He did The Haunting in 99.
Oh, God, it was terrible.
And then the last movie he directed was Lara Croft Tomb Raider, The Cradle of Life.
Oh. And the second one with that was the second one with Angelina Jolie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like the last one with what's her face?
Alicia Vikander.
I think she's great in that movie.
She is very good. Well, they're doing another one with her.
Really? Because that thing tanked.
Yeah, no, they're going to do another one.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I thought she was great in that movie. I thought she was just beautiful and awesome in that movie.
Mm-hmm. And Jan de Bont was supposed to do the American Godzilla in the 90s.
The one that Emmerich did?
Yeah, that Emmerich eventually did. There was a whole nother movie that was going to be made. Jan de Bont was attached to direct. It was going to be released in summer of 96, but he apparently his budget request is way too big, and they were like, "No, we're not doing that." Oh, and then Roland Emmerich and Dean Devlin come along and
double the budget.
Yeah, which I find shockingly ironic.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that. But anyway, Jan de Bont is the director of Speed, and it was his first time directing a movie. Keanu Reeves as a flat-out sort of action hero. Sandra Bullock becoming, you know, America's sweetheart just with that movie. Dennis Hopper, returning to the screen as an insane guy. And my favorite performance in the movie, Jeff Daniels, as the partner to Keanu Reeves, which is just such weird and strange and beautiful casting.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting thing. Like, before it came out, I wasn't sure what to quite make of it. You know, directorial debut, Keanu Reeves, big action movie, Jeff Daniels. The only thing that I was certain of was that Dennis Hopper would be nuts. That was the only thing thing that I was absolutely certain of.
It's very, very art imitates life.
Yeah.
Because Dennis Hopper was bonkers.
I met Dennis Hopper.
What was that even like?
It was great. This was when...
Was this after he had calmed down a certain amount?
Well, this is when he got sober.
Yeah.
You know, I met him. He was in town to promote a really terrible movie called Flashback with him and Keanu Reeves. Yeah, yeah, or not Keanu Reeves. Him and Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah, very bad.
And it's an awful movie. It's a really awful movie. But he was in town to promote that. And he had been sober for a while at that point. And his big comeback year was 86 with Blue Velvet and Hoosiers. Oscar nomination for Hoosiers because they're not going to nominate Frank Booth. That's not going to happen, even though that's the better performance. But he was fine. He was lovely, and I loved talking to him. My favorite movie of his that he directed. Into the Blue. Yeah, Into the Blue. I asked him questions about that, and he seemed very, very thrilled that somebody loved that movie.
Into the Blue.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that's not the Paul Walker movie?
No. Can you look up Hopper? I think it's called Into the Blue. I can't believe I'm blanking on the name of the movie. When he made that movie, it was really kind of at the height of his addictions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, the height of his addictions and craziness was really Apocalypse Now. That was when you can see, if you watch Apocalypse Now, he doesn't know where the hell he is.
It's Out of the Blue.
Out of the Blue, which is my favorite. I think it's a masterpiece. I think Out of the Blue is an absolute masterpiece. I think it's the best movie that Dennis Hopper's ever directed. It's an incredible film. And he was just, he seemed shocked that I had seen it, that anybody had seen it. And especially that not only had I seen it, but I adore it and think it's a masterpiece and a great film. But no, he was great. He signed an unauthorized biography that I had of his. He was happy to sign it. And he signed it. I'll tell you this, because in the middle section of the, you know how you get these biographies, and in the middle section, there's all these black and white photos. And
right.
Okay, there was one that was taken when he was, and it just said underneath, it said delusional, seeing visions, not even be able to talk, and he looked terrible. And he opened up to that picture, and he signed that one.
He seemed to be more or less at peace, with what his life had been.
Oh, absolutely, up to that point. Man, absolutely. He looked back at it, and he's able to look at a movie like Out of the Blue that he made under a lot of influence, and be able to separate himself from that. The kind of behavior that he was having at that time and the art itself. But and he was, come on, man, he's in Land of the Dead.
That's true.
He's in Zombies, man.
He has a speaking role on one of my favorite albums of all time, Demon Days by Gorillaz. He does this like spoken word bit, and it's so good.
Yeah. So anyway, Hopper was the only thing that I was certain would be crazy in Speed. Right. And then I see Speed, blew me away. So we're talking about we got from Mental Floss. They have some 15 rapid facts about Speed. Maybe you didn't know about it, but we're celebrating the 25th anniversary. And if you want to jump in, talk a little bit about Speed and your first time seeing it and memories about it and all that cool stuff, 312-981-7200.
I was a workshop owner in the Gulch. Fixed a diesel fixed me, what a weasel. Maybe was a workshop owner.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. If you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. We're going to go back to the year 1999 and look at what a crazy music year it was and talk about some of the best songs. In fact, it was at Rolling Stone. It has an article about the 99 best songs of 1999. So we're going to fly back 20 years, talk about the music and listen to some of it and all that cool stuff. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
That was Emo. Wanted to hear Albert Flasher by the Guess Who.
By the Guess Who. That's a deep cut right there. That is a deep cut. But yeah. So, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We celebrated last night Ghostbusters' 35th anniversary. And it was a blast. It was a real, real blast. And we had a huge crowd at the AMC Rosemont 18 for the screening, and it was fun. And I still can't believe that Ghostbusters is 35 years old. And now I can't believe that 2 days ago, Speed celebrated its 25th anniversary. I really, really cannot believe that it's 25 years old. And so we're talking about some crazy facts about Speed. And we'll get to that in a second. But here is Ike on WGN. Hey, Ike.
Hey, Nick. How's it going,
Jim? All right, man.
It was good to see you yesterday. It was an honor to meet you. I'm glad you like my costume. I'm still wearing it right now.
Ah, there you go. No, you look great, man. And it was great to see that movie on the big screen again. That was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, that was my first time seeing it. It was such a blast.
Yeah.
Definitely. Okay, I want to give you some facts about Speed. I'm not sure if you knew about. I'm sure you knew about this. The first fact is that it was originally supposed to be a Die Hard movie. It was supposed to be Die Hard 3.
Oh, okay. And so they were going to get Bruce Willis and everybody in to do it as a Die Hard movie.
Yeah, of course. When Avengers came out, you could tell there were some similarities in that one.
Yeah.
Because when Simon says, "Go this way, go that way," and all that.
Yeah, no. There are absolute similarities between it and Speed. No question about it.
Most definitely. Okay, I want to talk about the original casting choices for both Keanu and Sandra Bullock's characters. I'm going to start with Keanu. The three I remember was Tom Hanks, William Baldwin, and Tom Cruise.
I can't see. Well, I can see Tom Cruise, but I can't see the other two at all. I can't see the Tom Cruise. I can see in any action movie. He makes at this point. Tom Cruise is making the best action movies of all time right now, because the Mission Impossible movies are the best action. It's best, one of the best action franchises of all time.
Yeah, him and Keanu. And okay, yeah. I'm going to go on to Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
Okay, Halle Berry.
Right.
Michelle Pfeiffer, and you are going to have a heart attack on this one. Ellen DeGeneres.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes.
I couldn't even, that's another one that I just could not even imagine.
I'd watch it.
Yeah. All right, Ike, thanks, buddy.
No problem.
All right, take care. They do mention Halle Berry in this article. Ellen DeGeneres. This is what they, Ellen DeGeneres was, claimed she was never officially asked, though, they said. Barry wasn't interested, nor were Meryl Streep or Kim Basinger. Meryl Streep.
That would have been interesting.
Kim Basinger. Graham Yost, who wrote it, wanted Ellen DeGeneres for the role. She claimed she was never officially asked, but Demolition star Sandra Bullock won the role. And she was. And you know how much she was paid?
How much?
$200,000.
What? Wow.
That's it. All right. Adjust for inflation. All right, when we come back, more facts about Speed. It's the 25th anniversary. We want to hear from you about it. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. The news is coming up right after this.
Rain and tacos from out of the sky. Tacos, no need to ask why. Just open your mouth and close your eyes. It's rain and tacos.
It's rain and tacos.
What the hell is this?
I'm not entirely sure.
It's Raining Tacos, I would guess, is the name of the song.
Yeah. that was requested by Sharon.
Sharon.
Yeah.
Who's the artist?
Perry Grip.
Perry Grip.
Yeah. I hope that's the one she... I can only assume that's the one she was looking for.
I don't think there's a lot of songs called It's Raining Tacos.
No, are you sure? I think Sinatra did one.
It's Raining Men is a very popular song.
Wild Card Wednesday.
There you go. Wild Card Wednesday, man. Give me Wild Card Wednesday. Get your requests in now. Any artist, any sound, anything. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. We're going to go 20 years in back in time and talk about a pretty crazy music year, the music year of 1999, and hear some of those songs and talk about some of them as well. Right now, we're talking about the movie Speed. And it is celebrating, 2 days ago, it celebrated its 25th anniversary, if you want to feel old. And so we've got some facts here about Speed. LA officer Jack Traven, played by Keanu Reeves, and Annie Porter, Sandra Bullock, do their best to keep a bus running at over 50 miles per hour to prevent a bomb from going off in 1994 Speed, one of the quintessential action films of our time. Here are some facts about the film that you may need to know before your next quiz, Hotshot. First of all, I just want to say really quickly, I think the plot for Speed is ingenious. Like, you just got to keep that, you got to keep it, the bus is going to blow up if it goes below 50. I think that's fantastic. I think it's just a great, very simple idea that, and they explored every possible action consequence to it. So, here are some facts. It was written as a better version of Runaway Train. Let's not get crazy. Let's not get nuts here, because Runaway Train is one of my favorite movies. Future Justified showrunner Graham Yost once asked his father, who was host of Canada's Saturday Night at the Movies, if there was any film that was a great idea and it never reached its full potential. One of his answers was Akira Kurosawa's script called Runaway Train, made in 1985 by Andrei Konchalovsky. There's nothing wrong with Runaway Train. Is this guy nuts? Have you seen Runaway Train?
I have, yeah.
It's fantastic.
Very enjoyable.
It's a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
In Runaway Train, the brakes are frozen solid. The younger Joe saw the movie and thought it would have been a lot better if it had been set on a bus and if there was a bomb involved. He was inspired by Runaway Train. That's a good inspiration. Yeah, I love that movie. I think Runaway Train is great. John Voight, Eric Roberts, Rebecca De Mornay. Great movie. Here's your next fact. In the original script, Harry ends up being the bad guy. No. No, I would not have enjoyed that at all. Yost liked the twist until he realized a month before production that Jeff Daniels' character turning out to be the heel wasn't believable enough. Also, the bomb was set to go off at 20 miles per hour, not 50. And the bus was going to circle Dodgers Stadium, not LAX, before blowing up on the blowing up the Hollywood sign. Wow. No, you can't have Jeff Daniels be the bad guy. You can't.
It just doesn't work that way.
Not at all.
Can't do that.
He's so good in the movie. I love Jeff Daniels in that. Well, I love Jeff Daniels in everything. I think he's great in everything. But I really thought he was great in Speed. 20 miles per hour. How is that exciting? The bomb's going to go off if you go below 20 miles an hour. How is that exciting?
I don't know. Maybe keeping with school zones or something.
It doesn't make any sense. It's ridiculous. 50 miles per hour. That's the way to go.
It's fast, but not so blindingly fast.
Right. No, it's perfect. It's perfect. 50 miles per hour is perfect. But 20 miles an hour? How exciting is that? Oh, we're going 21 miles an hour. That's terrifying. What? Now, this I had no idea. Joss Whedon wrote 98.9% of the dialogue. Had no idea. Whedon did a rewrite on the script, which he received no official credit for due to a Writers Guild of America ruling. Whedon said that the one character he significantly changed was Alan Ruck's character, Doug Stevens, who was initially a mean lawyer. Whedon owns a Speed poster that was made, which listed him as a writer. Oh, okay.
Got to get it in there.
Okay.
Yeah. He also wrote, like, most of Toy Story.
What?
And he did the first, I want to say he did, like, he was either going to direct or he wrote the first draft of Alien Resurrection.
Wow.
He's done a lot of stuff that just didn't go credited because he was
Well, yeah, I mean, there are so many of these people out there who are script doctors who don't get credit.
Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Huge script doctor.
Yeah. And now we get back to some of the roles. Stephen Baldwin turned down the role. Not a real good move. In addition to that, Baldwin brother, Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks, Wesley Snipes, and Woody Harrelson were all approached to play the lead.
I would have definitely watched it with Wesley Snipes.
Oh, I can't do the Wesley Snipes anymore.
No?
No. No.
Come on.
No. Except for his cameo in what we do in the shadows.
I love Blade.
I love Blade as well. I like all three Blade movies.
Mm-hmm.
Third one's not great, but it's not as bad as everybody says it is. The first Blade is great.
Uh-huh.
And so is the second one. Yeah. But the first one, because I went into the first one going, oh, man. Because the first time I remember seeing Wesley Snipes was in Mo Better Blues. And I was like, who is this guy? You know, I thought he was phenomenal in it. And then New Jack City's a dumb movie, but he's good in it. And then, like, when he went on and I love him in Jungle Fever. He's phenomenal in Jungle Fever. So, but then when he was doing that, what's wrong with the president's house? What the hell was the name of that movie? Somebody got killed near the president's house. That was the name of it. And then he did the Passenger 57 and Boiling Point.
Money Train.
I like Money Train.
I like Money Train a lot.
I like Money Train. And, oh, yeah, and speaking of Money Train and Woody Harrelson, I like White Men Can't Jump. White Men Can't Jump is one of my favorite moments in film history that belongs to Kadeem Hardison. Going to Sizzler. That's one of my favorite moments in film history. But, no, he did, like, a bunch in a row. The White House Got Killed and the Passenger 57 Boiling Point.
Is it Liberty Stand Still?
No.
Is that everything? Oh, man.
No.
I'm trying to find that.
It was in the 90s. It was, like, right around the Passenger 57 time and Boiling Point. And
Murder at 1600.
That's it. There it is. Murder at 1600. So he did all these terrible, like, really bad sort of action movies. And so when they announced Blade, I went in with the lowest expectations that you could possibly imagine. And I was like, what the hell is this, Blade? Another stupid Wesley Snipes movie. And then the first 10 minutes happened of Blade. And I went, whoa! And I feel bad for Stephen Norrington, the director, because he directed the hell out of that movie. And it was, that movie has one of the best opening scenes ever. Blade. It is one of the best opening scenes ever, and it kicks ass throughout the entire running time of the movie. But he would go on to direct. I felt bad for this guy. I don't know what else he directed, but he did the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and then I believe that ended his career. I'm pretty sure that ended his career, and I'm trying to think if he directed anything after that.
Almost ended a few careers. Did end a few careers. That movie.
It was an awful movie. Awful movie. Chunk
Alan Quartermain.
It's a terrible movie. So Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise, Stephen Baldwin, Wesley Snipes, Woody Harrelson were all approached to play the lead. Director Jan de Bont thought Keanu Reeves was a great fit right after he saw him in, of course, Point Break. Well, of course. He's Johnny Utah, man.
I still can't believe that's a character name.
That's what the original title of the movie is.
It was just Johnny Utah.
It was called Johnny Utah. Yeah.
Oh, man. It kind of sounds like a softcore.
Johnny Utah. And I just love that movie so much. I'm an FBI agent. I know, man. Isn't it wild? Speak into the microphone, squid brain. That, of course, is the great Gary Busey. That's one of those movies. You know when you see a movie and then, like, a character that you love gets killed? And, like, the audience audibly gasps or goes, no! That happened every time I saw Point Break in the theater when Gary Busey gets killed. Because he's so great. You Angelo Pappas.
Mm-hmm.
So, Halle Berry turned down playing the role. We talked about that one already. The bus jump was added by the director. Jan de Bont wanted a part in the middle of the movie where it seemed that the bus was doomed to explode. On his first try nailing the freeway jump, the bus landed on a row of cameras. Jeez. One bus used had its tires blown and suspension damaged when it went over 100 feet in the air and 20 feet off the ground.
You're going to get people killed, man.
Throwing buses around, man. Taking out cameras, blowing out bus suspensions and stuff. Here's one. The director made Reeves cut his long hair. De Bont wanted his star to look strong. I didn't want people to think of Bill and Ted anymore. I wanted them to think of Keanu as an adult actor now, said De Bont.
Well, and there's also a level of realism to that in terms of being a SWAT guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, SWAT guys don't have long hair.
No, of course
Jeff
not.
Jeff Bridges kind of has long, and it's not that long, though.
But in the opening sequence with the elevator, when they come busting in. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, one of my favorite things in Speed ever is Keanu's entrance. his car is off the ground. The first time you see Keanu Reeves, his car is off the ground. Like, that's his entrance. Like, this is the character's entrance. His car is off the ground, comes flying, hits the ground. He gets out of the car, all, you know, suited up, ready to go.
Peak 90s.
It's fantastic. Keanu Reeves dealt with the loss of River Phoenix during the filming. Oh, yeah. Speed was in the midst of its production on October 31st, 1993, when actor River Phoenix passed away. Reeves and Phoenix co-starred in I Love You to Death. Oh, I forgot about I Love You to Death. Keanu Reeves is amazing in that movie. And you know what other movie he's great in? He's great in Parenthood. Keanu Reeves is great in Parenthood. And My Own Private Idaho, they did together. My Own Private Idaho, one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite Gus Van Sant movies, if not my favorite Gus Van Sant movie. That was the year that Keanu Reeves had a stellar year, 91.
Very good year.
Because it was Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, it was Point Break, and it was My Own Private Idaho. That's a strong year. And they were extremely close friends. All I can say is I have never felt anything like that before in my life, said Reeves. I was very sad and something beyond sad. I don't know what it is, just that you sob for hours. In order to make the production easier for Reeves, DuPont changed the shooting schedule so that the grieving actor could work on some of the easier scenes first. Cast and crew shared that Reeves was extremely quiet following the news. When he wasn't filming, he read Hamlet in his trailer. Yeah, they're so good in both of those movies, but especially My Own Private Idaho. Mm-hmm. They're so good in that. And you know what? I mean, it's weird because he's not good in Much Ado About Nothing. My Own Private Idaho is Shakespeare, and it's great.
Yeah, he just got. I guess Gus just got a particular performance out of him.
He did. He did. And you know, River Phoenix was just such a talented actor, like on a different level. Good. Yeah, that was such a sad. That was just a really. I remember where I was when I heard it. I was with this girl that I was dating. I used to work at Planet Hollywood, and we were hanging out at Planet Hollywood after hours on Halloween. She had worked on Halloween, and we were hanging out after hours, and somebody had like the TV on or something behind, and they broke in and said that River Phoenix was found dead in front of the Viper Room. He collapsed in front of the Viper Room, and Joaquin made the call. He was known he was known as Leaf then.
Yeah,
that was when he was known as Leaf. But Joaquin made the call to 911.
I know some people. I met someone who really hates the Red Hot Chili Peppers, specifically John Frusciante, the guitarist, because he was apparently the one that gave River Phoenix the speedball that killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, you know, they were both addicts.
Yeah,
there's really, you know, it's a toxic environment,
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was just,
it's a tragedy.
Ridiculous tragedy. True, true. Just ridiculous. But Keanu had to deal with it while he was filming Speed. Yeah. So, all right, hang on. We got more Speed facts for you here, celebrating the 25th anniversary of the action classic. And if you want to jump in, talk or text, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. All right, we'll take a break and we'll come back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran with your morning drive at 6 on this Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday.
You made Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah.
Get your requests in. Any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Squat. It's Joe Walsh with One Day at a Time.
All right. There you go. Hey, coming up also, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Yeah. We are talking about the movie Speed. Believe it or not, it was released 25 years ago on June 10th. And we've got some facts here about Speed that you might not know, some fun ones. And that's from mentalfloss.com. and celebrating the anniversary of Speed. And then last night we celebrated the anniversary of Ghostbusters, 35 years old. So now we're just specifically trying to make everybody feel old. So let's see. We've got more facts here. Sandra Bullock had to learn how to drive a bus before filming. She passed her test on her first try. Despite the license, a stunt driver controlled the bus from the second row of seats in some scenes. In others, a stunt driver was on the roof. All right. You know what? You know what? Speed showed me, at least, that you ever wonder what's inside those barrels that they put on the expressway? Well, LA, apparently in LA, it's water.
It's just water.
Yeah.
I always wonder, are those just to demarcate lanes?
Yeah.
Like, just be like, hey, by the, oh, and probably prevent a worse crash.
Right. But, you know, I mean, I always assume that they put water in them just for the effect in the movie. Mm-hmm. My guess is it's sand. And I would imagine it's sand in here in Chicago. And I would imagine it's sand in LA too, but they were like, you know what would look cool?
Water. It goes to show that it was came out 25 years ago, because nowadays they wouldn't waste water.
Yeah.
Not in the desert.
No. 724 area code says, I loved Wesley Snipes and U.S. Marshals, even though they totally ruined that movie by giving away that Robert Downey was the bad guy halfway through the film. Yeah, that was the sequel to The Fugitive.
Yeah.
U.S. Marshals, because it had...
Had Tommy Lee Jones.
Had Tommy Lee Jones in it.
Joey Pants.
Yep, and Joey Pants. I didn't hate that movie. I remember not hating it. I've only seen it the one time, but I remember not hating it.
It's obviously not as good as The Fugitive.
But, no.
But it was nice to see...
A lot of it shot here as well.
Yeah. I liked all the Marshals in the Fugitive. I was like, these guys are great.
Yeah.
I'd love to see them do something.
But you know, that it was funny because what's really fun is that I was working... I was a managing editor for Roy Leonard's Going Out Guide magazine that he started. And he had me be the managing editor, and I wrote, and he wrote for the magazine as well. And the offices, we were on Institute Place. And the offices were right by the L tracks. And they filmed a scene where Wesley Snipes jumps onto the L tracks and from the roof of a building in the train. The building was right next to ours, so we could see them filming. They were there filming Wesley Snipes jumping around on roofs and stuff. That was fun.
Wesley Snipes. Is that Blade?
Yeah. Well, this is pre-Blade.
Way pre-Blade.
309 area code says, To Wong Fu is the best Wesley Snipes movie. I don't know if it's the best Wesley Snipes movie. It's a good movie. But, I mean, I like that movie.
It's a lot of fun.
It is fun, but Priscilla is so much better. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're not exactly the same movie, but I don't know. And the only really convincing drag performance in that movie, Leguizamo. Leguizamo is doing a fantastic drag performance. Snipes and Patrick Swayze were doing the kind of drag performance I did. I was in a play called Bitches, and it was 13 guys, all female characters. Everybody was in drag. And I didn't even alter my voice. I just, you know, and I was the only one that didn't ever wear a wig, because I used to have hair that went down
in the middle of my
back. And so when I did that show, I didn't have to wear a wig, and everybody was like jealous. So we had 13 guys in that show. Six were straight, six were gay, and one was so far in the closet he was in Narnia. That's so after each performance, we would go out to have beers and stuff. And sure. So like one night, you know, we would alternate, because we would do, it was a late night show that we would do two times a week. Mm-hmm. We'd do it on Friday and Saturday nights. And so one night would be gay bar night. One night would be straight bar night. And it was fun, because we would switch back and forth each night. There was an actor in the production who's named Mitchell Fain, who is a really good friend of mine and a lovely guy. Good, really, really talented actor. He was just on the TV show Redline, along with like 10 other people that I know.
Oh, that's great.
Elizabeth Laidlaw, a bunch of people
very
that I know.
Show.
Jeff Rice, like a really... So, but Mitchell would always be, like when we went to the gay bars, like if we went to a gay bar that was like... kind of hardcore, and we would go to some gay bars that were pretty, you know, pretty hardcore, he was like, I got your back. You're my boyfriend. So he would always pretend to be, I would always pretend to be his boyfriend when we would go to some of the, you know, kind of scarier gay bars.
Where Rob Halford used to hang out.
But I mean, no, I'm serious. There's some that we went to where it was like, whoa, you know, and you know, God bless, you know, no, nothing against it, but the behavior, I mean, it wouldn't be acceptable in a heterosexual bar.
No.
So, but yeah, I'm talking about the kind of bars that they feature in the movie Cruising. That's the kind of stuff.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking
okay.
about. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeesh.
Mitchell would always stick real close to me. And we were always like, we didn't care. Like, the straight guys were like, yeah, let's go. I don't care. You know? So, all right, we're going to break. When we come back, more talk about Speed, the movie. 312-981-7200. News is up after this. Great song.
I've never heard this before. This is lovely.
You've never heard this song?
No.
Wow.
It's awesome. I love this.
Oh yeah. No, it's a great one. It's a great song. Who requested it?
It's coming to us from the 209.
All right. Nice job. Okay. Hey, you know, by the way, I was just thinking, I don't know why this popped into my head, but you know, when you first started working with us, we did a couple of segments where we got to know you.
That's true.
And you ended up playing a couple of songs as bumps, like you played. you played Deep Purple.
Yeah,
obviously.
Hush. That's been like my de facto theme song since.
And
I was 10.
There's a quiet hush over the world.
Yeah, there's a kind of hush.
There's a kind of hush all over the world. And then, do you know which one you didn't play that you missed?
Which one?
Voices Carry.
Oh.
Voices Carry, man, by Till Tuesday and Annie, yeah. Amy Mann.
You know,
hush, hush, keep it down now. Voices Carry.
That's an excellent choice.
Yeah, I just thought of that one.
And once that Kaja Goo Goo song came into my life, Too Shy, hush, hush.
Yeah, yeah. There's another one right there. Yeah,
I know.
But yeah, Voices Carry. I couldn't believe we didn't even think of that one. And the reason why is because I go on a Till Tuesday kick every once in a while because I love everything that Amy Mann has ever done ever.
Yeah. Did she do the soundtrack to Magnolia? Or no?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 That's Amy Mann.
Okay, I was right.
Yeah. So, but anyway, that's another one. You can add to the Hush collection,
to the Hush album.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking about Speed. The movie is 25 years old. It celebrated its 25th anniversary 2 days ago. It was released on June 10th, 1994. And we're talking about some facts. Mental Floss put together an article that gives you a bunch of facts about the movie Speed, and some really weird ones too, like some of the people that were considered for the role that Keanu Reeves ended up playing, like Tom Hanks and Stephen Baldwin and Woody Harrelson, Tom Cruise. Halle Berry was considered for the Sandra Bullock role. So was Ellen DeGeneres, who the screenwriter really wanted. So those were just some of the scenes or some of the facts that we know. And we've been talking about, and obviously Speed, we're going to be talking about Keanu Reeves here. And someone, 708 area code says, speaking of Keanu Reeves on a role, he's in a new video game called Cyberpunk 2077. He even showed up at the E3 Video Game Expo. Yeah, I knew that. I don't do the video game. I'm not a gamer at all. So like when I found, I thought it was a movie.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, awesome. And then I found out it was a video game, and I lost interest like immediately, even though Keanu was involved in it. And, you know, that's cool.
Well, I play the games every once in a while, not as much as I used to, but yeah. I'll be picking that one up, so I'll let you know if he's any good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's great. I think, you know, the more Keanu, the better in this world.
Yeah.
That's kind of my philosophy. The more Keanu, the better. So we were at another a fact here. The highway scenes were shot on an unfinished highway. This one I knew about. The Century Freeway wasn't opened until October 14th, 1993, a few days after filming ended, so the crew painted all the pavement lines and put up all the highway signs. Wow. And poured water into those barrels. I added that. That wasn't written in the article.
No.
But it did look cool every time they smashed into a barrel and water went flying all over the place.
Yeah.
And then Glenn Plummer in his sports car smashes into one too.
That's just one of those things that makes you really appreciate production design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just someone had to think of that. Obviously, probably Jan de Bont was like, you know, it would be crazy if it was water. And then a team of people were like, all right, let's make it happen.
Who shot Speed? Why can't I remember who shot it?
Let's see here.
Because, you know, Jan de Bont obviously started as a cinematographer. And I can't remember who shot it. But obviously a great cinematographer shot it because it looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm. See, Andre, oh man, this is a tough one. It's a Polish name, so please, I apologize in advance. Andre Bartkowiak?
Oh yeah, that's, yeah.
Bartkowiak?
Yeah. And he would go on to shoot more.
Yeah, he did Terms of Endearment.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, he has shot a lot of movies. But it's interesting, you know, when cinematographers, you know, start directing movies, I always find it interesting who they hire.
Like,
who are they going to hire to light and shoot their movie?
Mm-hmm.
And it's always something that fascinates me, like when someone moves on, unless they shoot it themselves.
Yeah, I can see that.
Which is what P.T. Anderson has been doing now for the last couple of movies. And Phantom Thread was so beautiful looking, and he shot the hell out of that movie. It was gorgeous. So the highway scenes were shot on an unfinished highway, and they had to, like, make it look like a real highway. The actors on the bus got bonus stunt pay. The late Paula Montez insisted that because the actors moved from the bus to the rescue vehicles themselves, that they should be paid extra money. That's pretty cool. They got some extra dough for doing that. The movie, when they first screened it tested through the roof. At a test screening, some audience members walked up the aisles backwards so that they would miss as little of the movie as possible before going to the bathroom. It helped convince 20th Century Fox to move up the release date from August to June. Why didn't you pee before the movie? That's my question, you know. Speed is less than 2 hours long. You know, if you love the movie so much, pee beforehand. That's all I'm saying. And then that way you don't have to get up and leave at a movie that you are highly enjoying. They walk backwards up the aisle. Empty the bladder before the movie starts. You know that, because I normally don't. I mean, I'm fine with that. I can sit for 2 hours without worrying about something like that. Not so much in the middle of the night now that I'm 53 years old, but, you know, or in the middle of the day. Sorry. But the last time I did that purposely was Endgame. That was the last time I did it. It was like right before the movie started. I was like, I got to go to the bathroom because it was over 3 hours.
Yeah.
So.
Especially because you drink a lot of water.
I do. And I drink a couple of bottles of water during a movie, too.
Yeah.
Like last night at... At
Ghostbusters.
At Ghostbusters, I polished off the big Dasani. I did, man.
Man, I got so hydrated last night.
Yeah.
Polished off a massive bottle of Dasani.
Watching William Atherton, and I was getting hydrated. So it tested through the roof. Annie's telling her failed dream of becoming a graphic artist was left on the cutting room floor. Oh, a little backstory for Annie got cut. As with some back and forth between Jack and Harry that would have given more insight into their friendship. Oh no, they cut Jeff Daniels out of the movie. They cut more Jeff Daniels. I want more Jeff Daniels. I want the director's cut with more Jeff Daniels.
The people demand it, Jan.
I demand Jeff Daniels.
I wouldn't mind like a Speed 3. Now, I think we've waited long enough.
Well, I think but there's still such a bad taste in my mouth with Speed 2. Speed 2 was so bad. It was just so bad. What?
I do love that it's cruise control. I think that's a great subtitle for it.
Here's the thing. I love Speed so much. the movie. Now, we're going to get that pulled out of context, and that'll be played. But I loved the original Speed so much, and it was such a surprising movie because, again, I didn't expect it to be not nearly as good as it is. I you know what I mean? I thought maybe, whatever. But it's an action. I think it's an action classic. Yeah. I think it's
really way better than it has any right to
be. Oh, absolutely! Like legitimately great stuff. I mean, like really terrific from top to bottom, from performance to execution to editing to concept. It's a great movie. And so, I was very excited about Speed 2. I was very excited because I love Jason Patrick. I think Jason Patrick is amazing. And Sandra Bullock came back. The villain was Willem Dafoe, and it was the same director. It was Jan de Bont. So I'm like, okay, cool. And then it's on like a cruise ship and you know what, that's about as exciting as if the bus went down to 20 miles an hour. That's about as exciting as Speed 2 was. And I remember I was so excited about it. I was just so incredibly excited about it. I'm like, okay, Jason Patrick's awesome. Sandra Bullock's awesome. And Jan de Bont's awesome. Willem Dafoe is awesome. The first movie was awesome. This is bound to be awesome. No, quite the opposite. I've only seen it the one time. I was so massively disappointed by it. I went with my first ex-wife, and we were both very excited. She loved Speed, the first one as well. And so we went, and about 45 minutes in, we both just were like looking at each other like, what the hell are we watching here? It's so bad. And I just remember, I don't remember a lot about it except that it's slow and stupid and really illogical and unexciting. Everything that the first one was, this wasn't. Like, everything. Yeah. And Willem Dafoe was terrible as the villain. And I just remember at one point, he's in his cabin in a tub with leeches. That's the only thing that I really remember from the movie is that at one point, Willem Dafoe is covered in leeches. And I'm like...
Sounds great. Not so.
What? And I don't know how they tried to explain it. I don't remember, like, the explanation for why the villain was in a tub with a bunch of leeches. I don't remember the explanation. And I'm like, do I really need to see Willem Dafoe, like, naked with leeches on him?
I mean, it seems like kind of a predecessor to other weird stuff he would later do.
Yeah.
Antichrist was pretty weird.
Yeah, well, he's done a lot of weird stuff. And oh, he was Jesus! Oh! Last Temptation of Christ. Oh!
Straight out of Queens.
Yeah. So, all right, we got one more fact that you might not know about Speed. We'll take a break and we'll come back and wrap that up. And we'll talk a little bit more about Speed and maybe a little bit more about action movies. And we're going to jump into the music from 1999. That'll be after the news. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. 312-981-7200 for talk and text if you want to join us.
Necessities, simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries. And
there's a little tune from my childhood right there, man. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Dino.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here. It's Wild Card Wednesday. You mean Wild Card Wednesday? And we're talking about Speed, the movie, because it is it's 25 years old. It just turned 25. It celebrated its 25th anniversary a couple of days ago. And so we're talking about that. And then how bad the sequel was. That's funny because, like, you know, at last night when we had the post-screening movie talk, we talked about how disappointing the Ghostbusters sequel was. And it was truly, truly disappointing.
It's at the point where if you go out to get the new 35th anniversary edition, you can't just get Ghostbusters.
It comes with Ghostbusters 2.
It comes with Ghostbusters 2. They're like
forcing that on you?
They're like, just take it. Yeah. Just take it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, like Speed 2, same director. And in this case, Aykroyd and Ramis wrote it, too. They wrote the second one. So there's really kind of no one to blame. So... There you go. let's see. The writer, Graham Yost, realized too late what Jack could have done to save everyone a lot of lives and time. Janet Maslin of the New York Times wrote in her review of Speed that Jack could have simply shot out the bus tires before it reached 50 miles per hour and armed the bomb. Yost said he didn't think of that when he wrote the script. If he had, he would have had the Jaguar driver hit Jack before he got a chance to shoot the tires, not realizing that he was a cop. To get that out of the way. All right. Didn't even think of that.
I wasn't worried about it. I don't like obviously you can question the internal logic of any movie.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to, but I don't like to.
Yeah.
I just kind of want to take it at face value first, unless it's very obvious that there's
I'm the same way. I'm the same way. I want to be taken out of, when I go see Escapist Entertainment, that's what I want. So I don't think about, well, they could just do this or do that. I do sometimes. It depends. I guess it depends on the movie. You know? 773 area code says, speaking of the song Voices Carry, I'm reminded of a very funny bit from Pop-Up Video in the 90s on VH1. That I'm still laughing about. One of the pop-ups was when Americans are polled about which one of the Three Stooges is their favorite. 28% their choice is Larry. I used to love Pop-Up Video. I thought Pop-Up Video was great. 708 area code says, of course Keanu hated the idea for Speed 2 to do Devil's Advocate instead. I happen to love Devil's Advocate.
That's one with Pacino,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's in a very interesting period of his career.
There's a lot of screaming going on in Devil's Advocate, but for some reason it didn't bother me in that. I think Devil's Advocate is actually pretty great.
Because it bothered you in Heat.
Oh my God. He's playing the devil in The Devil's Advocate. So at some point he's gonna scream he's got a monologue about how God is an absentee landlord. I'm a fan of that movie, man. I really like that movie. Charlize Theron is the female lead in that, right?
She is, yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm a fan. I think Keanu's good in it, too.
Where are you on Scent of a Woman?
I hate it.
So,
I mean, I don't hate the movie that much. It's way too long. First of all, it's way, way too long. There are things about that movie that I Martin Brest directed that movie, and he's made some terrific movies and some flawed movies. And he also likes to make long movies because and I loved it. I love the Joe Black movie with Brad Pitt.
Oh, Meet Joe Black.
Love that movie.
Yeah.
But it's like 3 hours long.
Martin Brest
directed that, but then Martin Brest directed Geely. So,
ooh.
Yeah, but he did the original Going in Style.
Uh-huh.
He did Beverly Hills Cop. And he's a great sort of like great actor's director. And I don't know. But Son of a Woman, it's just a hoo-ah when he did. I'll take a flamethrower to this place. Like, come on, man. And he won the Oscar for that? You're going to give him the Oscar for that movie?
Yeah.
I don't know. 312 area code says another mindless sequel was Die Hard with a Vengeance. I didn't like Die Hard with a Vengeance very much, but it's certainly better than the two that followed it. I mean, there are things in Die Hard with a Vengeance that I think are absolutely idiotic, and I've told you this before, but every time I watch that movie, every time I've seen it, when they solve that damn water puzzle,
yeah, with the jugs of water,
the first time I saw it, I literally for 10 minutes I was like, what? I wasn't even paying attention to what was happening on screen because I was like, how the hell did they figure that? What? And I never understood it. And then every time it comes on cable and we get to that part and I watch it, I go, whoa, what did they do? What?
I love Die Hard with a Vengeance.
Nah, I don't. It doesn't. There's one really great scene there's a couple of chase scenes that are not bad. The chase scene in the rain,
mm-hmm.
Where the car is spinning, that's pretty cool. And the scene on the elevator when he's on the crowded elevator and just takes everybody out. That's the best scene in the entire movie. But overall, I was just like, it was funny. My friend Scott Oaken is like, especially in Die Hard with a Vengeance, I mean, in all of these heist movies, my friend Scott is like, and this was like his big, pet peeve about these kind of like big heist movies and stuff. It was number top of his list is Die Hard with a Vengeance. Is these villains clearly don't need any money because how the hell do they finance all of this crap to pull this heist?
Right.
Like there's 95 guys on the team. There's all this equipment. They shut down streets and highways and stuff. So how much money did Jeremy Irons have? He didn't have enough money? He wanted to pull off the heist and spend millions and millions on a heist?
Well, he got
is he going to break even?
He got it on credit, man. Yeah. He's got big bills to pay.
Unbelievable. Anyway, yeah. But I'm not a fan of Die Hard with a Vengeance, but it's certainly better than the Die Hard with a Day or Day to Die Hard.
A Good Day to Die Hard.
And Die Hard Harder. Or no.
No, that's the second one.
Well, the second one's not really even... Everybody thinks it's called Die Hard 2, Die Harder. It's not. It's just called Die Hard 2.
Was the tagline just Die Harder?
Yeah, and everybody thought that was the title of the movie. It's not. The movie's called Die Hard 2. Opening credits just say Die Hard 2.
Yeah, it's the other two are Live Free or Die Hard.
And A Good Day to Die Hard. Yeah. So stupid. So stupid. And they're both PG-13. You don't make PG-13 Die Hard movies. So stupid. All right, we'll take a break. We're going to go back again in time, this time 20 years ago, to the music scene of 1999 and chat about that. And if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. The news is up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday year! And any artist, any song, anything. Who requested that?
That was coming to us from Rasco.
Oh.
It was Ronnie Wood doing 7 Days.
All right. There you go. Ronnie Wood. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here, 312-981-7200. We're talking about Rob Sheffield from Rolling Stone put a piece together, the 99 best songs of 1999. And it was kind of a crazy year in music. And so we're going to talk about the one-hit wonders and the big the classic songs and the stuff that really, really exploded in 1999. So Rob Sheffield writes, man, it was a hot one. 1999 was the year music exploded, the year when nothing made any damn sense, the year fans had to throw out any old school rules for how pop worked. The radio was suddenly filled with shiny new stars, so many timeless classics, so many shameless one-hit wonders, so much crazed innovation all around the margins. Teen pop happened, new metal happened, every genre was booming. Let's put it this way. If you spend an hour at your local karaoke bar, you're going to hear somebody belt out at least one hit from the summer of 1999. It was one of those pop moments when all that glittered was actually gold. So let's break it down. The 99 best songs of 1999. It's 20 years later. The hits, the flops, the flukes, the obscurities. Whatever type of music you loved, this year had it. It had hip-hop, electronica, indie rock, punk garage, country, R&B, disco sleaze, the old stylistic boundaries didn't hold anymore. The walls came down, said Sugar Ray's Mark McGrath. You could hear Kiss FM or Z100 coming right up, Mariah Carey, Blink-182, Eminem, Sugar Ray, and you're like, what is happening? Fans bought more music with money in stores than ever before. Nobody realized Napster was about to change everything. Carson Daly hosted Total Request Live on MTV every afternoon, where a new breed of stars got born. Britney, Xtina, Ricky, NSYNC, the Backstreet Boys, previously unknown producer named Max Martin presided over the connection that invalidated the radio and a strange alliance between the Swedes and the Mouseketeers. Woodstock 99 went down in flames. There was so much to hear, even great music could get lost in the rush, which is why going back means discovering new surprises. The world was cramming in its pop thrills as possible before the Y2K crash. No rules, no shame, no scrubs. So some of the songs turned into permanent classics, still beloved all over the world. Others came from weirdos experimenting in a tiny handful of fellow fanatics, but they all sound great today. So it's time to celebrate the music of 1999 as one wise old man sang, "Let's don't forget about it." All right. Now, you were six.
Yeah.
At this time, so you don't have a lot of memory, but I'm sure you've gone back and listened to a lot of the stuff that came out around that time.
Yeah, I absorbed a lot of it by cultural osmosis, mm-hmm. you know, just by being around it. I might not have known what it was, but there were so many songs that I knew what they were. And I was like, oh, yeah, that was from a different time. But I was mainly listening to stuff like Backstreet Boys.
Yeah.
Britney Spears I was in love with Britney Spears. Loved everything she did.
Yeah. Well, that's when she broke, wasn't it?
Yeah.
In 99.
I was right at the like teen pop sort of thing, and I wasn't even a teen yet.
Yeah. Well, let's see what we got here. Fatboy Slim with Praise You. What could sum up 1999 better than Praise You? An English techno DJ digs up an obscure 70s hippie gospel hook, bombards it with go-go breakbeats and computer blurps and Nashville honky-tonk piano. Result, a pop smash that everybody and their mother loves. Norman Cook, a.k.a. Fatboy Slim, mixed the whole armful of rare wax, most prominently Camille Yarbrough's voice, into a song that sounded home in a minivan, a daycare center, a druggie after hours bar, or a dollar an hour internet cafe. Dollar an hour internet cafe.
Oh, man. That is 1999.
Yeah. The video from Spike Jonze and Roman Coppola captured the vibe as the Torrance Community Dance Group interpreted it with a boombox outside of Southern California multiplex. I totally remember that video. Yeah. All right. What about Vibrant Thing by Q-Tip? When A Tribe Called Quest called it quits, it marked the end of an era. Q-Tip's first solo hit took fans by surprise as the Abstract swerved into a flashier, blingier lane. Many believers felt scandalized. But as Tip said, progressing is if you move yourself into a different place, you're on a search for a quest, pardon the pun. So there you go.
Q-Tip is amazing.
Yeah. I do agree with that.
I think the breakup of A Tribe Called Quest was really really a shame at the time.
Oh, I totally agree. I love Tribe.
Mm-hmm.
I love them. White Stripes, Astro. I don't even... What is this? I don't even remember the song.
You don't remember? Oh, okay.
I'm not a big White Stripes guy.
Yeah, this was really early. This was from their first album. Because the White Stripes... And I really didn't know this. I thought they were brand new. First time I ever heard them was in like 2003 when Seven Nation Army came out.
Yeah.
Like when most people discovered them. But they've been around since 1997. So this is, I've got a little bit here.
All right. I don't remember this at all. Maybe just because the Astro. Oh, I know, yeah. Yeah, I remember it now. I can't believe that I didn't remember it because he only says Astro 17,000 times during the song. But I'm not a big, like I said, I'm not a big White Stripes guy at all. I
was for a time. Sometimes I go back. There's certain albums of theirs that I go back and I really enjoy just because of nostalgia. And there's legitimately great songwriting. Jack White's, you know, he's a very monumental figure in... millennium music, but
yeah,
you know, it's not something that I would really listen to. The two-piece band thing really wore out its welcome after a while.
Get a bass player. get a bass player.
Get a bass in there, son.
Yeah. How about Macy Gray? I Try. I love this song. Love this song. Do you have? Do we? Can we get a little bit of that? Macy Gray. I Try. Great song. A great song.
I had such a hard time with that chorus when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah, I've always had a terrible... I have a great ear for instruments, but a terrible ear for lyrics. I have to have liner notes in front of me, otherwise I don't know what the lyrics to a song are. And so when she would sing, the lyric is, "My world crumbles when you are not here."
Yeah.
But as a kid, I just heard gibberish. I was like, I don't know what she's saying. I barely understood.
And I like her, too.
Yeah, she's great.
And I loved her in Training Day. I loved her in that movie. But yeah, and it says here that she was a high school classmate of Marilyn Manson's. They were both from Canton, Ohio. Could you imagine them in the same class? Could you imagine Macy Gray and Marilyn Manson in the same class?
I wonder if he was he like a goth kid then? I can only assume.
No, I've seen pictures of him.
He was a little bit more of a dork.
Yeah, he was this you know sort of skinny pale dude. Because you know like you know when Marilyn Manson hit. And by the way, The Beautiful People is one of my favorite videos ever. I love that video. I love the song too, but I love that video. It's one of my favorite videos ever. It used to freak my ex-wife out bad.
Yeah.
Like she'd be like, "Turn that off." I'm like, "This is awesome. What are you kidding me?"
Mm-hmm.
But you know, as soon as he broke with the, you know, all the makeup and the contact lenses and all that stuff, they dug out pictures of him when he was a kid, you know, just because they wanted to show, oh, this is what he looked like then.
Yeah.
This is what he looks like without me. Remember when he was dating Rose McGowan?
Yeah.
Weird.
That's like just reading about that. Like, cause I had a Marilyn Manson moment. I've never really been a huge fan of his music, but I've always appreciated him as a person.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially if you, like, I think it was Rolling Stone that he did the op-ed for when he was getting blamed for Columbine.
Yeah.
It was one of the most intelligent, he's an incredibly intelligent individual.
Yeah.
And that's when I really came to appreciate him as an artist. He's like, listen, this is just music I make. Yeah. You know, I have nothing to do with this.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's unfair that he got blamed for any of that stuff, you know? Now, remember The Matrix? They blamed it because The Matrix came out. Because of the trench coats and everything. And the Basketball Diaries?
Yeah.
That was another one that the movie The Basketball Diaries came out at that time, too.
Because there's like a dream sequence where Leo shoots up his school.
That's right.
Oh, man.
How about South Park? It's easy, MK. We talked about musicals last week. We could talk about South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut for hours, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I adore that movie. It's so great. It's just so great, and the songs are so good.
Mm-hmm. Although most of them you can't.
No, I can't. I can't. They have lyrics here that I can't read.
Yeah.
In the article, but it's easy, okay. We talked about the movies of 1999 some time ago, so I thought it would only be fair if we talked about the music. But they mentioned this as when South Park Bigger, Longer, Uncut came out, it was 1999. It was the summer's funniest movie, but it had stiff competition from American Pie, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, Cruel Intentions. Cruel Intentions is a comedy?
Kind of.
I mean,
I could see the argument.
I'll tell you what. I like that movie better than Dangerous Liaisons. I think Cruel Intentions is a better movie than Dangerous Liaisons.
Mm-hmm.
Another movie in which Keanu Reeves was not good.
Yeah.
Go, loved that movie. Dick, which is a fantastic movie. And 10 Things I Hate About You. But it was a good summer for movies.
Very good summer, especially for teens.
Yeah, no question about it. All right, let's take a break and we got more music to talk about. What do you guys remember from 20 years ago, music-wise? What were you into? 312-981-7200. Bringing back a lot of memories here talking about this stuff. Let's first get, and we get back to it after we take a break here for the weather. And here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, mostly cloudy. Best chance for showers and thunderstorms is in the afternoon and into the overnight hours. The temperatures will peak in the low 70s. For tomorrow, partly sunny by midday. The highs will hold in the upper 60s. Friday, temps in the upper 70s. Under partly sunny skies, the clouds will thicken, leading to a chance of thunderstorms late. Saturday, periodic showers, thunderstorms will persist into the overnight hours. Temps will reach the mid-70s despite a lack of sunshine. And then for Sunday, which is Father's Day, temperatures reach the upper 70s, chance for showers in the overnight hours. It's currently 68 degrees at O'Hare, 69 at Midway, 68 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, more music from 20 years ago. What do you guys remember? What songs are memorable for you back in 1999? And we'll talk more about it right after this. Theme from Animal House, Stephen Bishop. Man, I love that movie. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. Wildcard Wednesday continues.
Jimmy Wildcard Wednesday, Wendy.
And 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Coming up, we have Steve Grzanich at 5 o'clock with the opening bell. And also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Who requested the Animal House?
That was our good pal, Steve.
Steve. All right, Steve. Thank you. Okay. We're going back to 1999 and talking about some of the songs that came out that year. It was kind of a crazy year for music. And lots of things were blowing up and being real popular and also not very popular, but making the grade. Next here is, The Offspring. The Offspring. Why Don't You Get a Job? Oh, the zany days of 90s full employment economy in the Clinton-era boom. As the jobless rate reached historic lows, a rock band could turn a sentiment like this into a jolly sing-along TRL hit. The Offspring, man. Those guys had quite a moment.
I never really understood the popularity. I was never a huge Offspring person.
No?
No. I'm sure they're very talented.
I guess I was fine they were among those bands that were all interchangeable at a certain time. Like, yeah. I didn't even know who the hell some of them were. I would get the names were similar. The music sometimes was
right.
You know,
right. No, they were. I think really the only one that I thought was good, the only song they had was "Pretty Fly for a White Guy" because I thought it was
right.
Funny.
Yeah, I think that's the one that everybody likes. I even like that song. Mm-hmm. And how about Brad Paisley? He didn't have to be.
He was, wait, how old is Brad Paisley?
Brad Paisley?
Yeah.
I would guess in his 40s.
Jeez, I didn't know that he was recording that long. He only came into my consciousness in like the last 5 to 10 years.
Brad Paisley's like in his 40s. Sure.
Oh, no idea. No idea.
Brad Paisley wrote his first hit after listening to a buddy talk about his stepson. Brad told him, let's make a song about you two and make your wife cry. This is always the right way to write a country song. This is why this West Virginia boy zoomed straight to number one and has basically parked there ever since. Okay. Shall we move on to Counting Crows?
Do we have to?
Counting Crows.
Adam Duritz.
Didn't he sleep with everybody on Friends?
Probably.
I think, I mean, of the female characters on Friends, the only one that he didn't sleep with was Kudrow. But I think he had an affair with Jennifer Aniston and with Courtney Cox before she met Dewey. So
it's probably those sweet dreads.
Colorblind was the name of the song. I don't remember. Would I remember it if I heard it? Oh, it was in Cruel Intentions.
Black and white. Pull me out from inside. I am ready. I am ready.
Oh.
I am ready.
Okay. You know what? I remember this from the movie.
Oh, okay.
I remember it from Cruel Intentions. Because I've seen Cruel Intentions. I've seen Cruel Intentions more times than a 53-year-old man should see Cruel Intentions.
Well, I don't know any Counting Crows songs outside of that one about the taxi.
Well, that's not his. That's not their cover, right? That's a cover. That's a Joni Mitchell song.
And then there was that one, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, that's the one. The Mr. Jones.
Well, they did one. I remember this must have been in, what was it? It was the 2006 Bears that went to the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, at the beginning of 2007.
Yeah.
Right.
And they had a running back with the last name Jones that some radio station, and I know Bears fans will stab me, but some radio station did a dumb like joke parody cover of Mr. Jones, but it's about the Bears player.
The Bears player. How about Beth Orton's stolen car? Why doesn't this doesn't even ring a bell to me. Beth Orton got her start as the voice of Folktronica with her acoustic guitar and her sullen English delivery. She got discovered by techno producer William Orbit. Wow, all right. Singing a Francois Hardy ballad over drum loops, she won the hearts of club kids with her dazed vocals on the Chemical Brothers' early records. I do not know this song. Do you know Stolen Car by Beth Orton?
You're sitting, your fingers like fuses, your eyes were cinnamon. You said you stand for every known abuse that was ever threatened to anyone but you.
Yeah.
She kind of just sounds like most female vocalists of the 90s.
Well, I mean, she does. I mean, that's a pretty distinctive voice, though, I think. And I recognize her voice. I kind of recognize that song, but I recognize her from other stuff. It's got to be the Chemical Brothers. It's got to be the Chemical Brothers stuff, then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So. All right. How about this? Jay sends in a text. In 99, the Go-Go's were working on the album God Bless the Go-Go's, which was released in 2001, 17 years after Talk Show's, the album Talk Show. 312 says, today's so-called pop top 40 music sounds like an auto-tuned tin can on a tape recorder. Well, we're talking about stuff from 20 years ago.
And, you know, there's plenty of bad stuff from previous decades that it would embarrass people.
Yeah, no, there's bad music in every decade. It's just that as I get older, I notice it more often now. So, all right. The news is coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday continues.
Hear me, Wildcard Wednesday here.
That's any artist, any song, anything. Who requested the Hendrix?
That was Sam.
Sam. All right, Sam. Hey, welcome back. We're going back to 1999, 20 years, and talking about some of the music that came out. It was a crazy year for music, and we got some texts coming in. If you want to jump in with your thoughts, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. Is this Dan Long?
Yes, it is.
Oh, good. Dan Long says it's it's Easy MK, of course. Of course he likes that. Blink 182, Enema of the State is still a guilty pleasure. Not a Blink 182 guy?
I have never and will never like Blink 182. I think they're one of the most overrated bands of all time. Everybody my age has like some weird nostalgia for them. I never understood it. And that's not even because I don't like pop punk or whatever they were part of. I just couldn't stand them as a band. I found them to be completely inane.
Yeah. It's not my scene either. But again, I was an adult man when those records were released, and I was like, nah.
Yeah, and the frontman, Tom DeLonge, has easily one of the worst voices in music.
Oh.
It's just horrendous.
765 area code says, my favorite song of 1999 is You Get What You Give by New Radicals. That was everywhere.
Oh,
that
man. Song. Still is.
Yeah.
You walk into a Forever 21, boom.
I don't hang out a lot at Forever 21. That'd be a little weird. By the way, we have another round that we're going to play. We want you guys to get in here. We're going to play another round of Know Your Onion. That means you have to tell the difference between a real news headline and an onion headline. And we have two separate players. We play two rounds, one with one player and one with another player. And you get your chance to win. And everybody's a winner, but if you get the majority of the five news headlines that are read to you by Tom, our host, if you can guess that it's either, you either say it's real or it's The Onion, and The Onion, of course, is a fake news satirical newspaper website. But the news, the real news in this world is so weird that it's getting to the point where you can't tell the difference between the two. So that's why we're playing Know Your Onion. You get a chance to win. And we're going to do that right after the 4:30 news. So stick around for that. All right. Let's see. We got a few more here. Bright Eyes, A Perfect Sonnet.
Yeah.
Would I recognize this?
Maybe. It was that's Connor Oberst. And he's been more popular in the last couple of decades, but Bright Eyes was his first little project, very, you know, soft indie rock sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
So let's see, you might recognize it.
'Cause that's all that you get, so you'll have to accept you are here, then you're
He's not my favorite.
I don't recognize the song.
No.
Yeah.
Probably very that's not, popular I, this, on college that's, campuses.
That's also not my, that doesn't sound like my thing at all.
No.
Yeah. Pet Shop Boys, you only tell me you love me when you're drunk. I know Pet Shop Boys. I wasn't aware that Pet Shop Boys was still recording in 1999. I know the Pet Shop Boys from the 80s.
Yeah, West End Girls.
Oh yeah, I loved Pet Shop Boys. I thought they were great. What about this? The Donnas. You don't want to call. I love the Donnas.
Donnas are great.
I think they're awesome. I remember that. Oh, Pearl Jam, Last Kiss. It's a great cover.
Mm-hmm.
A great cover. Beck, Deborah.
Oh man. That's a jam.
I'm not a Beck guy at all.
But have you ever heard this song?
I don't know.
So basically in 99 he comes out with this funk album that's like just totally not what he's usually doing.
Yeah.
And he just does basically funk and soul, not covers, but funk and soul style music. Like, you got to hear this, especially this song is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard this song 9,000 times.
Yeah.
I just didn't know what it was. And again...
Oh, I think it's hilarious.
I've never liked Beck.
That's fair.
I like the. You know what? What Beck album is actually not that bad, because I'm not a big Beck guy. I'm just not. I never have been. Is the album? What's like? It's just the most depressing breakup album like ever.
Oh,
and
oh my god,
I can't remember the name of it, but like it is one of the most epic breakup albums of all time. So. Yeah.
I know exactly which one. Sea Change.
That's it.
Sea Change from 2002.
That's it.
I really enjoy that one.
Yeah. How about Kissing Book, Superman versus Lloyd? What the hell is that?
Yeah, I have no idea what the hell that is.
It's a 3 minute sliver of guitar crushdom, the kind of tune you could randomly hear on a car radio late at night and remember for the rest of your life. Kissing Book turned out to be from Portland, led by Andrew Caffer, whose breathily anonymous voice fits the mood. Oh, and it's Lloyd Dobler he's referring to?
I guess so.
According to this, the lyrics are, now I feel like more like Lloyd Dobler driving around at night trying to figure out what went wrong. For people who don't know, Lloyd Dobler is the character that John Cusack plays in Say Anything. Lloyd, all null and void. So it's Superman versus Lloyd, and it's Lloyd Dobler. All right. Oh, man. All right.
I mean, a lot of these lower ones are kind of deep cuts.
Yeah. Moby Natural Blues, another guy I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, never, like, he blew up in the late 90s, and I just never really understood why.
Yeah, no, that's definitely not.
And he's
definitely
had this recent scandal thing with Natalie Portman where he claimed that they were dating.
Yeah. Why?
Weirdo.
Korn, Freak on a Leash. Now, I know this one. I do absolutely know this one. And this was this is another one of those categories of bands that are interchangeable with like five other bands. It was Freak on a Leash was on Total Request Live every day there, they say. And that's the video was like a bullet, right? Was it it followed a bullet?
Yeah, that's like going through various
rooms and places and stuff like that. That's it.
God.
Korn.
My sixth grade math teacher, he came into class on Monday and he had this huge, huge welt and bruise on the side of his neck. And we were like, what happened to him? I have no idea. And eventually one of us had the courage. We're just like, what happened to your neck? He's like, oh, yeah, sorry, I was at a Korn concert this weekend and I got kicked in the neck by a steel-toe boot.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, 2006, weird year.
Yeah, that's very weird. NSYNC, I Drive Myself Crazy. I don't know that one.
Not one of their best hits, if you ask
me. I mean, I know a lot of NSYNC hits, but not that one. Shania Twain, That Don't Impress Me Much, drove me nuts. I can't stand that song.
Really?
I can't stand that song.
The Crossover Queen?
No, I can't stand it. I just can't. I mean, maybe it's not. I don't think I hate all of Shania Twain's songs, but I certainly can't stand that song. Can't stand it. And she was married to John Mutt Lange,
mm-hmm.
who ended up like cheating on her, and then they got divorced. And John Mutt Lange is the guy who produced Hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
And Pyromania, two of the greatest sounding records of all time. And I guess, did he produce her stuff? Yeah, or no?
I'll have to take a look here.
Yeah. All right. Well, local people should know this. Wilco Via Chicago. I don't know how big that was nationwide, but I certainly remember it.
Yeah, and it looks like he did produce That Don't Impress Me Much, at the very least, and co-wrote it. Shania Twain and Robert John Mutt.
Yeah.
Mutt Lange.
Good old Mutt Lange. I love those two. I love the way those two Def Leppard albums sound, though, man.
It's too bad he couldn't bring it to Shania.
Some of the most polished and insane production that you could ever hear on a record on those two Def Leppard albums. Okay. All right, we're going to break, and then we're going back again to 1999. Do you guys remember any of these songs? Which ones impressed you?
There's a jungle out there. Disorder and confusion everywhere.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WG and Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. Who wanted the Randy Newman?
That was Tim in Batavia.
Tim in Batavia, a little Randy Newman for you. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to jump into some music. We're going back in 1999. Rolling Stone put together a list of the 99 best songs, and I'm skipping around a bit because there's, you know, a lot of stuff on this list, but... also included here is Christina Aguilera, Genie in a Bottle. Of course, you remember that.
Massive hit.
Yeah.
Huge hit.
Yeah. Let's see. What about, oh man, The Magnetic Fields, The Luckiest Guy on the Lower East Side. Is a girl I dated. Cheeto Fingers.
Yeah.
When we first got together, It was we started dating in February, and and it was February 2000 when we started dating, and we were kind of doing it on the down low because she was kind of seeing somebody.
Oh.
And so we were kind of doing it on the down low, and but we fell really hard for each other, like really, really hard for each other. And she bought me 69 love songs for Valentine's Day. And she's like, look, I'm going to give you this, but I don't want you to freak out. Have you heard this record, Tom?
Yeah, this is...
It's an astonishing piece of work, the Magnetic Fields. Yeah. It's Stephen Merritt. But it's, you know, you give that... Could you imagine giving that to someone who you've been dating on the down low for about 8 days?
Yeah, that's intense.
It's very intense.
It's very intense.
And she gave it to me, because I felt like... Because I fell hard for her, like big time, in a like that. Like 3 days in, I was like, okay, this is the one. And so when I got that from her, because I didn't vocalize that to her. I didn't say, oh my God, you know, blah, blah, blah. I fell for you. But when she gave me that record, I was like, oh, I guess the feeling is mutual. So it was a confirmation. I love that album.
Yeah, it's an incredible...
It's unbelievable.
For me, I really love the song, The Book of Love, which is on this, but is beautifully covered by Peter Gabriel in a full orchestra.
Yeah.
That version now is that, unbelievable.
That record, that 69 love songs, that record has a real emotional... I have a real emotional attachment to that record for obvious reasons. And so... How about the Beta Band, The Hard One? There nice. You go.
And now I will sell 5 copies of the Beta Bands, the 3 EPs.
That's my buddy Matt. Hey, man, who is this? It's a Beta Band. It's good. That's my buddy Matt.
I just love the head bob that Matt's doing. Just like, yeah,
it's
yeah.
The head bob. That's the originator of the role of Barry, my friends. Limp Bizkit, the Nookie. Yeah, man, Limp Bizkit, yeah!
Limp Bizkit should be illegal.
Fred Durst. See, that's another one. Falls right into the corn category for me. That's all that crap is the same.
You know, I retract what I said before. Like, this year had some rough stuff.
Oh, yeah, it did.
This is some, oh, my God.
Here's the thing, though, about that stuff that we're talking about right there, the corn and the...
Yeah, the new metal.
Yeah. You know where I trace that back to?
Where?
I trace it back to the Judgment Night soundtrack. I trace it back to the Judgment Night soundtrack. That's what I trace it back to. When they combined, they combined the hardcore acts with the rap acts. I love the Judgment Night soundtrack. It's the best thing about the movie. It's the soundtrack.
Well, and you get some good stuff out of it. Like I think Rage Against the Machine is undeniably great.
Yeah.
I think System of a Down is undeniably great. But then you have like Korn, who I don't know if you saw, the guy from Korn just played on Ted Cruz's show, or not Ted Cruz, Mike Huckabee's show. He jammed out with Mike Huckabee. They played like Freak on a Leash.
Are you kidding?
Yeah, because Mike Huckabee plays the bass.
That's ridiculous.
I couldn't believe it was happening.
How about this? Flaming Lips, Feeling Yourself Disintegrate.
Their best album, hands down.
Soft Bulletin?
Yeah.
Without question, their best album.
It's amazing.
Everything on that record is great. Here's the one. Okay, in the summer of 1999, the aforementioned play, The Vinyl Shop, of which my friend Matt was a part of, we spent 3 weeks in New York at the Fringe Festival performing it in Manhattan, which was wonderful. And it was the summer of 1999. It was August of 1999. So we were there for 3 weeks. And again, I was barely sober for the entire time I was there. But everywhere we went, everywhere we walked, windows open, music playing, bar, jukebox, somebody once told me every single place that we went, that damn All-Star was play, Smash Mouth All-Star. I mean, I'm telling you, could not get away from that song.
You know, do you remember the movie Mystery Men?
Yes.
They're all in the music video. It's like framed as a Mystery Men like tie-in.
Really?
Like Ben Stiller.
Is it in the movie? I know it's in Shrek.
Yeah, I think I don't know if it's in the movie, but it's definitely on the soundtrack to Mystery Men. Because I'm not kidding. The entire opening of the music video is the cast of Mystery Men trying out people to be in the group.
I don't remember it at all.
Oh man, Dane Cook's in the music video.
Oh God,
very pre-fame Dane Cook.
And you know, then finally the song goes away, and then the damn Shrek movie comes out, and I'm like, oh God,
yeah.
But now, did you ever see the sketch where the sketch on SNL where Nassim Pedrad's the little girl, and they're trying to put her to bed, but every time they say goodnight to her and they walk out, Smash Mouth is in her closet.
Yeah, yeah.
Comes out, and it starts out, somebody wants Bobby Moynihan with the bowling shirt and the soul patch.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One of my favorite sort of obscure sketches. But the fact that they never get to the chorus, it's always somebody wants, they never get to the chorus. And the chorus is obviously one of the most recognizable choruses, you know. But that song was everywhere in New York that summer. Oh, my God. All right. How about Amy Mann, Wise Up? Nice to see him include this. Here's what they say about it. Mann had already built her hard-won following as a singer and songwriter after her Voices Carries days with Till Tuesday. But Wise Up became her most famous song with an unforgettable appearance in Paul Thomas Anderson's L.A. Ensemble Magnolia. Anderson used this ballad as the film's emotional climax as a cast of lost souls all over the city, Julianne Moore, Jason Robards, William H. Macy, Tom Cruise, Philip Seymour Hoffman, all sing it to themselves. No mention of John C. Reilly? You don't mention John C. Reilly? What are you trying to tell me here? It's not really the emotional climax of the movie. It's probably one of the biggest emotional moments in the movie. So, how about Sugar Ray, Every Morning?
Oh, my God. Talk about songs you couldn't escape.
Yeah. Everywhere, man. Everywhere. But there's a Sugar Ray song that I like.
Which one is that?
Really, truly, and I truly, really, really like it. Okay. When It's Over. I love that song. I adore that song. It is so ridiculously catchy. But yeah, When It's Over, I adore that song. So, all right. We're going to break. We got the news coming up, and then we're going to jump to Know Your Onion. So you might want to call in now. We're going to take two separate callers. You guys hang on. You play separately, and if you answer a majority of the news headlines correctly, you win a great prize. Nobody's going to go home empty-handed anyway. So call right now, and we'll get you guys on hold, and you'll play separately. So it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. If you can tell the difference between a real news headline and an onion headline, you win. It's that simple. Onion or real. 312-981-7200. News is coming up. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and Wildcard Wednesday continues.
You've been Wildcard Wednesday here.
And, who enjoys the Rockford Files?
That's Paul in Maryland.
Paul in Maryland. That was our first TV show theme for this Wildcard Wednesday, and Wildcard Wednesday is almost over. That's weird that we didn't get another TV show theme. All right, Wildcard Wednesday will continue. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're about to play a round of Know Your Onion, and we need one more contestant. We're going to go with our first contestant right now, but we need another contestant, and so call in right now, first person through, 312-981-7200 will be contestant number two. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 right now, first contestant. Here's the idea. The idea is that Tom is your host, and he will read some news headlines, and you have to guess whether the news headline is real or if it's from The Onion, and it's a fake comedy headline. So that's what you got to do, and you'll win prizes. That's how it goes. If you get the majority of the five that are read to you, you win a prize, and then you're not going to go home empty-handed anyway. So call us right now at 312-981-7200, and the first person through will be our contestant number two. Contestant number two. And some really fun prizes to be given away here on Know Your Onion. We do this every Wednesday morning. It's a Wednesday feature on our show. Every Wednesday morning after the 4:30 news, we like to quiz you guys and figure out whether or not you know your onion. So... And we have, of course, Tom has made an exclusive theme and introduction for Know Your Onion as our host. Can we play the introduction, Tom?
It's time to Know Your Onion!
Yeah. That's the fantastic opening. We have a very, very excited studio audience with us this morning for Know Your Onion. and we're getting ready to get going here. And it is through our first round here. This is Mike on WGN. Mike is in Round Lake. Mike, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
All right. You know what the onion is?
I do know what the onion is.
Oh, good. So now you're just going to have to tell the difference between a real news headline and a fake onion news headline. And it's pretty simple, yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so Tom's going to read you a headline, and all you got to say is onion or real? Real or onion, okay?
All righty.
Okay, listen up. Here we go.
All right, here we go, Mike. Your first headline, De Blasio courts Iowa voters by winning largest candidate at the Polk County Fair. Is that real or is that the onion?
I'm going to say that's real.
Oh, unfortunately, that is the onion.
Yeah.
Believe it or not,
that's
very much the onion.
I mean, he's like 7 feet tall, De Blasio. Seriously, he's like, he's like 6'8". And do you know that he killed a groundhog?
What?
De Blasio, by the way, De Blasio is maybe the most hated mayor in the history of New York.
Wow.
They hate him. And I think it was about a year and a half ago, it was Groundhog Day, and they passed him the groundhog, and he dropped it.
Oh!
And he dropped it, like, on its head, and then they took it to the vet, and the next day it died.
Wow.
I'm not making that up. That's a real thing. But the thing is, he dropped it from 12 feet, because the guy's a giant.
Yeah.
So,
oh my God.
Yeah. All right. So you're 0 for 1, Mike.
All right.
Let's move on to the next one here. International news. The Chernobyl nuclear disaster zone is now a hot selfie spot after the hit TV show. Is that real or the onion?
That sounds like it'd be real, too.
Let's see.
Yeah.
Very good. That's very much real.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
It's shocking. People are... Yeah. Posting,
it does,
like,
not surprise me at all.
Like bikini photos in
Chernobyl. It's absolutely ridiculous. Okay, you got one.
Got one down.
All right.
All right.
Here we go.
All right, here's the next one. A Krispy Kreme in Times Square will have stadium-style seats and a glazed waterfall. Is that real or the onion?
I'm going to say onion.
Oh, let's see.
Oh, that's real.
That's very real.
That's totally real. I mean, you know, it's Times Square. Of course it's real.
What else could they possibly
exactly.
do?
All right, Mike, you got to get these last two now.
Oh, man.
You got to get last two. So here we go.
All right. The Santa Anita Park officials announced they will stop allowing bets on all upcoming horse deaths. Is that real or the onion?
Horse deaths?
Yeah, horse deaths.
Oh, man. Onion?
Let's see.
Yeah,
very good.
That can't be real. Good Lord. If that was real, I would jump out this 18-floor window. All right, Mike, it's down to this. This is the fifth one.
Right.
The fifth one. You got to get this right. So here we go.
Okay, here we are. April the giraffe is going on birth control after 5 calves. Is that real or the Onion?
Real.
Shung-wing.
Very good.
Nice job.
That is a real, real article from the Huffington Post.
That was from the Huffington Post. Nice job. Way to pull it out in the end there, Mike.
Awesome.
Nice job. You got yourself a $25 gift card to Anderson's Candy Shop with locations in Richmond and Barrington or online at andersonscandyshop.com. And you're invited to Anderson's 100th anniversary party on June 29th and 30th in downtown Richmond and the Anderson's Candy Shop on Main Street. $25 to a great candy shop. Mike, hold on for a bit, okay?
All right. Thank you very much.
You got it, man. Congratulations. Nice work. That was a bit of a suspenseful one.
Yeah.
Didn't know whether he was going to do it or not, but he did it. All right, are we ready for contestant number two?
Yes.
All right, on Know Your Onion. Again, whether it's real or onion, here is Brian on WGN. Hi, Brian.
Morning, Nick.
Morning. You know the onion, correct?
Yep.
Okay, so you got to guess whether it's real or onion. Tom, go ahead.
All right, Brian, here's your first headline. Miller Lite has built a working video game controller in a beer can. Is that real or is that the onion?
That sounds like it could be real. Let's go with real.
Let's find out. I think that is very real.
Homer's very happy that you got that one right, Brian. All right, very good. So that's real, huh?
Yeah, you can get a can of Miller Lite that functions as a video game controller.
Man,
a very
basic
one, but a video game controller nonetheless.
I mean, yeah, okay, makes sense. Okay.
All right. Next up, Kraft introduces salad frosting to help trick your kids into eating more vegetables. Is that real or is that the onion, Brian?
I'm going to go with onion.
Oh, let's see.
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
That is very real.
Where is that from?
That is from CNN. Kraft has introduced a salad frosting. Yeah, it's dressing.
Yeah.
They call it salad frosting.
They call it frosting so your kids will eat it.
Yep, yep.
Oh, boy. Yeah. All right. Well, you got one still. You got to get a couple more here. Okay, what's next?
All right. In more video game news, Sony reveals that the PlayStation 5 will feature a fully functioning breakfast sandwich maker. Is that real or is that the onion?
I hope that's the onion.
Oh, I like that.
That is very much the onion.
That is the onion. Okay, yeah.
Right.
I really hope that's the onion. That's a nice way to put it, Brian. All right, okay. All you need is one more to get majority, okay? All you need is one more. So let's see what we got. What's next?
All right, let's see here. Okay, and this is in sports news. U.S. women's soccer team handing out flyers to advertise the World Cup tournament. Is that real or is that the onion?
I think that's real.
Oh, let's find out. No, that is the onion.
I mean, it's the most popular sport on the planet, Brian. All right, we'll get down to the wire again. Down to the wire once again. So,
okay.
Brian, you got to get this one right in order to get the big prize. So,
all right,
here we go. The pressure's on. Here we go.
All right, big breath, big deep breath. NASA discovers impact crater of meteorite that first brought horses to Earth. Is that real or the onion?
That's the onion.
Excellent!
There you go. Nice job. That brought horses to Earth. Oh, man. All right. Well, good job, Brian. Boy, both contestants taking it down to the wire, making it very suspenseful for this Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
And Brian, you get yourself a $25 gift card to Anderson's Candy Shop with locations in Richmond and Barrington or online at andersonscandyshop.com. And you're invited to Anderson's 100th anniversary party on June 29th and 30th. It's in downtown Richmond and the Anderson's Candy Shop on Main Street. So congratulations, Brian. You hold on, okay?
Will do. Thanks,
take care. Thanks for playing. There you go. We'll do it again next Wednesday. So get to know your onion, and then you can win. You could be a big winner like Mike and Brian, taking it down to the suspenseful wire this morning. So, all right. We'll take a break here for some weather. We get a weather forecast for you, and then we're going to wrap up the show and wrap up our conversation about 20-year-old music, 1999's music, and hear a little bit of it and talk a little about it as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
Well, my body could use a little slimming. I keep my shirt on when I go swimming, and I ain't seen my feet since 1984. The old to roll in the hay. We turn the lights down all the way, 'cause I don't look good naked anymore. No, I don't look good naked anymore.
Yeah, shocking that my father would request this one, right?
My God. He's a legend, man.
Oh, Wild Card Wednesday. What was Snake Oil Willie Band?
Yeah, the
the Snake Oil Willie Band.
Oh boy,
I don't look naked. I don't look good naked anymore. There you go. Wild Card Wednesday concludes. Yeah,
boy, that was my nickname back in college.
Yeah,
Snake Oil Willie.
Snake Oil Willie. All right, now my dad's a weirdo. All right, coming up. The stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, let's hit some more of these songs from 1999. This one is one of my favorite songs of that year, or kind of any year. Beautiful Stranger by Madonna. That was it was featured in Austin Powers' The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Number one grossing comedy of 1999.
What, Austin Powers was?
Yeah.
The Spy Who Shagged Me?
It was the number one grossing comedy of 1999.
Oh, my God. Made more money than American Pie?
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
It was a huge hit. It was a massive hit.
Wow. But anyway, the best part of the movie is that's is the song. And Heather Graham. All right, here's another one that we heard 8 million times when we were in New York. This one almost as much as Somebody Once Told Me. And it's that damn Santana Rob Thomas Smooth song, which I hate. I can't even express the depth of my hatred for that song. And it was everywhere. Again, summer 1999 in New York. You couldn't go anywhere without Smooth being played.
Probably Santana's biggest hit, really.
Oh, no question about it, which is unfortunate because, you know, Carlos Santana rules and Santana has a lot of really great songs. And unfortunately, that's the one. Of course, that was from that that album that had all the duets on it. Like he did Dave's on it. And I like that song, but
Please don't call him Dave, man.
Everybody, we all call him Dave.
Come on.
We call him, all Dave Matthews fans refer to him as Dave. They do.
Jeez.
How about Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way? Tell me why.
Legendary.
I like the Backstreet's Back.
Yeah.
All right. Dun, 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 dun. Mostly because of the video, because the one guy is a wolfman. Another guy is a Draculaman, and then there's a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hydeman, and a mummyman. They're all dressed up as like classic monsters.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Yeah.
That's my favorite. Kellis, Caught Out There. I don't know that. Would I know that if I heard it?
I don't think so. I'm not sure I can even play it, unfortunately. Right. I believe there's some cursing. But you know her other song about milkshakes bringing up
the voice
of the art.
Oh, that's her. Okay, yes, yeah. I know that. The aforementioned Blink 182 with All the Small Things. Good Lord, that you couldn't get away from that song either.
Yeah, it's a little bit much.
LFO Summer Girls. I don't remember that.
Oh God, I think I remember that one.
All right. Fiona Apple Paper Bag. I like Fiona Apple.
She's great.
When did Criminal was before that, right?
I want to say yes.
Yeah, I love that song, and I love that video. It's a video that's just, there's something wrong about that video, the whole video. Seriously, it's like really, it just seems like when it's over, it's like, I need a shower. Jay-Z, Big Pimpin'. Yeah. How about Sleater-Kinney, Get Up?
Probably more of an underground hit.
Yeah.
But they're great. I love Sleater-Kinney. Kerry Brownstein.
Yeah. Yeah. Britney Spears, Baby One More Time, makes it at number 3.
Top 10 songs of the 20th century, if you ask me.
Oh, God. Come on, man. Oh, God. Number 2 here that they say for the, you know, the best of the 99 songs of 1999. Oh, man, Steal My Sunshine by Len. I can't stand that song. Can't stand it. Oh, God.
what you can't become if you only say what you would have done. So I missed a million miles of fun. I know it's up for me. Making sure I'm not in too deep.
So they were basically a couple of punks from Toronto. That's how they're described. Mark the Burger Pimp Costanzo and his little sister Sharon.
Wow.
And then the number one song, according to this writer in Rolling Stone, of 1999, is TLC with No Scrubs.
That's just obvious.
Well, I mean, it's phenomenal. I mean, it's phenomenal.
You play that in any bar, any club, any gathering, people will go absolutely insane.
Well, it's not my favorite TLC song.
Are you more of a Waterfalls guy?
No,
or?
No. Creep.
No, that's good.
Creep is my favorite, and I love that video where they're in the silk pajamas and everything. I love TLC.
They were an amazing group.
They're unbelievable. They're unbelievable. They were great. No Scrubs is a fantastic song. But yeah, no, it's all Creep. It's all about Creep for me. That's my favorite, but it's actually kind of by far my favorite TLC song. So, though, well, there it is. No Scrubs tops the world 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it still tops the world as far as I'm concerned. All right, listen, tomorrow on the show, Michael Lehman is going to join us. He is the director of Airheads, which he is in town to host a screening of at the Cinepocalypse Fest, and he also directed Heathers. So we will talk with Michael Lehman, and there you go. Triple Play Thursday will happen too.